much about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
This is Anything Can Happen Thursday.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
Know that you were in Slither, and I remember seeing that movie at the time, but it seemed like it was a long time ago. What stuff did you do in Slither?
What stuff did I do in Slither?
Yeah.
I don't understand the question.
Where are you going with this, Bean?
Who were you in Slither? Did you chase snakes? What did you do back then?
It didn't go so well.
No, it did not. It was shockingly bad.
Just so habitual now that it almost seems like just habit.
Oh my god! Because of coronavirus! Oh my god!
And now,
girls should stick to girls' sports, such as hot oil wrestling, boxy boxing, and such and such.
Our feature presentation.
I think Homer Simpson has it right. We should listen to him more.
Such and such?
Such and such.
I am the queen of such and such.
You are. You do that well.
I'm the best.
Homer is the smartest man in the world.
That's correct.
I think he makes a lot of sense, too. I think I'm with you on that one.
He may be one of my top five favorite TV characters of all time.
Oh, I think you have a lot of company with that. Yeah, he's awesome.
Morning, everybody. It is the Kevin and Bean Show. It's a Thursday morning. What's happening?
What's happening is we are taking your phone calls as we do every day at this time for Kevin and Bean's What Did You Nephew. This time, the Thursday edition, you get on the air, you get a prize, 1-800-520-1067. Before we go to the calls, big news yesterday. You heard about the Goldilocks planet, I'm sure, Kevin.
Nope.
They found...
Oh, you missed it too, Lisa?
How could we possibly miss the Goldilocks planet?
They found a new planet, and I think it's only 20 trillion light years away,
if I recall correctly.
Yeah. And they're saying it's the first one that they found that they think has essentially the same conditions as Earth does in terms of how far away from the sun it is and what the not too hot, not too cold. Liquid water can exist there. They of course it's impossible to tell at this point whether there's actually going to be life on there, but they say there's no reason why there wouldn't be.
This is wasn't Stephen Hawking telling us we need to find another alternative to live?
Yes, he was.
Seems like it would take a while to get there.
Well, it's not geographically
convenient.
Convenient, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's the bummer. I mean, I think when we get to the point where we figure out how to go way, way faster than we're going right now, then I think there's going to be a lot of exciting things that man's going to be able to do in terms of going and exploring other worlds. Right now, it just takes too long. I mean, they were talking yesterday about how, man, we'd sure love to send a camera, but it would take 200 years to get there.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, I guess that's worth doing if they could actually make a camera that would go there for 200 years and arrive in shape enough to send back images. I think it'd be worth it.
But if you wanted to send people, you'd have to send a very, very young couple who would then have kids.
On the way.
Yes, before to have anyone arrive.
And they would live their entire lives on a spaceship on their way to someplace else. That would be the extent of their life.
Do you have a good Google alert on new planets being discovered?
I don't. But this was this was all over, all the news yesterday because it was.
And it's Goldilocks planet because it's just right.
That's why they nicknamed it that. Yeah, that's not the name of it, but right. That was the nickname. Oh. Yeah. I'm not making it up. I mean, it really was. It was a big, big story. But anyway, long ways away. I'm very excited. As I've said many times on this program and even more times in my real life, one of my biggest fears is that I will die before I know that there is life elsewhere on the planet. That's very important to me. I want that to be so. And furthermore, I want to go to there.
I like that you have, a goal that is completely unreachable. Like you have zero control over that
right.
one. You're just going to sit around and hope.
I like goals like that too.
Sure.
Because they're so much easier. I don't have to do a thing.
You don't have to do anything. You just sit in your ass and go, hey, sure hope they discover. They, out there, I hope they discover something.
Yep.
Well, I'm hoping that that will be the thing that will make me hold on at the end of my life. That rather than die, I will stay alive, just in case news comes through. Because my fear is I die and then the next day we get visited.
Listen, I say this with all love. You don't need to hold on.
should I let go now?
I'm saying go to the light. Yes.
Oh,
go to the light.
I see. Okay.
All right. Let's take your phone calls. 1-800-520-1067. Any topic is fine. You get on the air. We're going to give you a prize.
We're sorry. You must first dial 0 or 1.
nephew?
What it do? What it do, nephew?
Pepsi Max 400 is what we're giving away today. It's a pair of tickets for you to join the crowd at the Auto Club Speedway a week from Sunday. Some of the biggest names in racing will be there. Tony Stewart, Jimmy Johnson, Dale Earnhardt Jr., and more. For tickets and information, visit AutoClubSpeedway.com. So that's your prize for being on the air for Kevin Bean's What a Do Nephew.
Got to tell you, we started doing What a Do Nephew because of Snoop Dogg. That's how he says hi.
Yes.
What a Do Nephew. And I think we continue to do it because none of us can pull it off. We can't pull it off. The listeners can't pull it off.
Are we going to keep doing it until we get it right? Is that the idea?
Well, that's just entertaining. People call up and go, what to do? What do you do?
Who do?
It's just awesome.
What did you do?
All right. Let's start with Mark. Hello, Mark. Welcome to the show.
What
to do?
What to do?
Hey, good morning, guys. I love the show. Kevin Bean, you guys are great, but you guys suck with this Glee thing with what you're doing to Omar. You're not paying him enough to watch Glee. I don't know how much you're paying him, but don't make him do that anymore.
Well, here's the thing, is that we didn't have any interest in having him watch the show until he started hating, and then we were like, all right, you're bringing in clips.
That's
funny. Because that's how we work.
Right.
That's funny. It's only funny if he hates it.
No, if they did that to me at work, I would quit.
Right.
What is it you hate about Glee?
It's just ruining TV with that uninspirational storyline. Omar hit every topic exactly right. It is crap.
Well, look.
Love him for it. He gets so amped up. Could you tell how high his blood pressure was talking about it?
He's about to die.
He is going
to
die.
We've known Omar for a number of years now. I've never seen him as legitimately furious as he was the other morning when he came in after Glee. But really, really angry about it. I mean, he was angry not just that it's a bad show or he wasted an hour of his time. He was angry that the show exists and he hated everybody on it and everybody who watches it.
God bless him. I love Omar to death for that attitude. There should be more like
Omar North Tower.
Yes, Omar North Tower. Yes,
thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Let's try David on the Kevin and Bean Show. He is on line one. A very important question that he needs our help with.
Hello. I have a question for you guys, since you guys are well-versed in this area. I've been married about 6 months, and my wife has gained a lot of weight.
How much weight? What did she start at?
And she started at 110.
Okay. And what is she now?
I think probably like around 200.
No.
Possible.
You don't gain 90 pounds in 6 months.
90 pounds in 6 months?
Not true.
Nope.
Mike, 90 pounds in 6 months?
I mean, it can't be done, but that's immense. That's like...
it's bizarre.
Oh my God. It would be life changing that much weight.
Yeah.
I think you're exaggerating because you're frustrated she has gained some weight. But can I guess that it's really more like 30 pounds and she's now about 140?
Well, no, she's shopping at the plus size stores.
Oh, if she's shopping at Lane Bryant, right.
David, is she pregnant and she just hasn't told you?
Or doesn't know?
Yeah, or doesn't know.
All right, so David, what's your question?
How do I tell her that to lose weight? Being sensitive about it.
Let me ask you a follow-up, because this is the important one. Do you want to remain married?
Yes, that's the question.
Not if she's that fat.
That's a good question.
Do you want to remain married? If so, then you have to tread lightly. This is a really touchy one.
I have a more important question. David, have you gained any weight?
No.
Okay, you mean, honestly, you still look good.
Wait a minute. Did you start fat?
Yeah.
David, how much do you weigh?
I weigh 260.
Oh, dude.
What?
Okay, well.
And are you 6'8"?
No.
Okay, David, you might not really have any ground to stand on.
Here's what I would say, David, in all honesty. I would say you need to go on a diet and exercise program and just do it.
Yes.
And don't say a word to her.
Because the truth is, your wife absolutely 100% already knows she's gained the weight. Mm-hmm. You're not breaking any news to her.
Wait, hold on a second. From a guy who's had some experience as a personal trainer and stuff like that, David, you might approach her and go, we need to lose some weight.
That's true.
That probably is the best way to go about it. And actually follow through with it, and you start going to the gym. You start eating a little bit better.
That will inspire her.
Yeah.
Okay, I see what you mean.
And make it about health, not beauty. Just go, you know what? I want to live a long time with you. Try to make it romantic.
And,
it won't be, but
all
you have
kidding
to try.
Aside, Kevin's right. And say, look, the way we're living is BS. This is wrong. We need to nip it in the bud now while we're young.
And honestly, I know that it's really hard for a woman to stay on a diet if she's sitting next to a guy who's shoveling in ice cream every night.
David's 260. He's like, she's gained weight.
I look fine.
What do I do?
All right. Well, listen, David, I'm glad you called. You came to the right show. You've heard the advice from the room, and I'm just going to add as a P.S. what I personally, Bean, would do, and that is I would just pack up my stuff, drive away in the car, and don't even leave a note.
Yeah. Just don't even tell her why.
Don't even tell her why. Just be gone one day and avoid that messy confrontation.
Bean would just take his flabby self out of there.
Or you could leave a note that says,
you're fat.
Either way. All right. Thank you for the call. Justin and John, hang on. We will give you the prize. We don't have time to take all the calls in the air today, but thanks for checking in with the Kevin and Bean Show.
Am I missing something about the L.A. football team?
Nothing new going on except what Ari Gold is working on.
Okay. Because that's what Jovan's calling about. It's about time we got a team, and I thought, I didn't know we were getting one. All right. Let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
Yeah, I don't think you guys know, man.
That is correct as well. Dr. Drew, every Thursday?
Yes.
Can't wait to
talk to you. Not a real doctor. Not a real doctor.
He's a real doctor.
Not a real doctor.
Not a real radio host, if you judge by last night.
Boy, what happened?
Show for work.
Didn't show. Yeah, so didn't call?
Show?
Well, yeah.
Didn't call?
I mean, I got advance warning.
So in other words, Dr. Drew.
That is the definition of didn't show.
But wait, let's just say you didn't. Let's just go with that.
I should have to work today.
Yeah. But Dr. Drew took one day off from one of his jobs, and Mike is coming down on him. Yeah.
I'm just saying he's got no time for that show, but he can call in this morning. It hurts.
Well, I think he's making the right decision.
I think Mike's a little jealous.
Yep. One of my favorite TV shows that I don't talk enough about, because I don't really know what to say about it, because I'm still trying to figure it out, is Fringe. It is so unbelievably good. And we have Josh Jackson on the show.
But which one?
Which Joshua? Oh, that's a good question.
Is it the real Joshua Jackson or is it the alternate universe Joshua Jackson? I guess we'll have to ask.
Yeah, this is one of those shows where there are two alternate universes and there's a Lisa May here and a Lisa May there.
That's too much Lisa May, number one.
Depends on which one.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So anyway, we got Josh Jackson today. We're going to talk to him about Fringe. Very excited about that. It's on again tonight. We have earthquake rumors.
Oh, just flying around.
I don't know if you got the tweet and you retweeted it. You're one of the bad people. But you can't predict earthquakes.
No, you're wrong, Kevin. It's scheduled for today. There's an earthquake scheduled for today.
Right. And let's say we have an earthquake today. Coincidence. Because you can't predict them.
Well, between a 6.0 and a 7.0, likely to hit Southern California, something like more than a 90% chance. So you should be warning people.
Well, I shouldn't be here, right?
Got retweeted 7 billion times because people are scared.
I think this is a pretty safe place to be, Lisa. I think you're in a pretty good position to be if in the event of an earthquake hitting.
Since I'm in a one-story building.
In the building that we're here?
Yeah, I'm saying that building is pretty secure, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right. We also have more details on Ozzy Osbourne and how he took care of his athlete's foot with cocaine.
That's sounds good. Reasonable.
That's reasonable, right? And we have an artist in the studio by the name of Trent Reznor.
Yay!
Nine Inch Nails is one of my all-time favorite bands. Trent Reznor now doing some soundtrack work. Justin for The Social Network.
Interesting.
And he's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
So we're excited to have him in the studio today. That's coming up. We will take a break and come back with the Showbiz Beat next.
This is the Kevin and Bean Show. Thanks for tuning in on a Thursday. Ralph is out this week filming a movie. We are taking a look at the Showbiz Beat. We have to start with two show business obituaries today. Now, ordinarily, I love death, but I'm not exactly pleased about either of these. Kevin, you won't care about the first one because he was old, but Tony Curtis has died. Legendary American actor.
Yeah.
He was 85. He had been in tons and tons of movies. Kevin, the reason you might have respect for him, I know you hate old people in old movies, but he married his sixth wife when he was 73 years old, and she was hot and 30.
Wow.
So you got to love that dude, right?
All right.
He also slept with over 1,000 women, according to his autobiography.
All right.
So Tony Curtis was a baller. But,
I'm down.
He is now gone. The other showbiz obituary that I know Psycho Mike in particular was very sad about when it became official yesterday is comedian Greg Giraldo, who had had a prescription overdose that they did not think was a suicide attempt. They thought it was just mismanagement of prescription drugs. And it looked like he was going to pull through. It looked like he was hanging on. But yesterday he did, in fact, succumb to the overdose, and he was only 44 years old.
Yeah.
He was a judge on Last Comic Standing. That may be where you saw him. He was also one of the panelists on Jerry Seinfeld's show The Marriage Ref on NBC, and he was also famous for being part of those Comedy Central roasts, too. But he was one of those comedians that a lot of other comedians really looked up to and respected. So that's a real loss at 44 years old.
Yeah.
And this just coming, what, about 3 weeks after the other comedian who died, Robert Schimmel. That's a tough time for comedy right now. Sorry to hear that.
David Hasselhoff. We love him.
Yes.
For all the wrong reasons. made a splash on the set of Dancing with the Stars. He was the first one off, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's correct.
But apparently he's not the happy-go-lucky guy that he would like you to believe he is.
But he was so happy to go just as far as he did.
Right. You know how they have sources?
Yeah.
One inside, an insider on the show told Us Weekly that David Hasselhoff has a staff, A, and B, they called repeatedly asking to change rehearsal times, canceling shoots, suggesting camera angles,
Oh, my God.
Doesn't Dancing with the Stars know more about how to make that show than David Hasselhoff?
You would certainly think so.
He's a diva. He wants to look good.
But who, but how would you even,
I don't know.
Where on the list would you put camera angles?
No, listen, kidding.
This is David Hasselhoff. I look best from the left side. So if you could get a camera over there, that would make me happy. Bye now.
So there were a lot of people over there on Dancing with the Stars who were happy that he was the first one asked to leave because he was probably making their lives miserable, right?
Correct, yes.
Sounds like, yeah.
The Hoff. This is bad news. You know Michael Buffer, the announcer for wrestling, who trademarked Let's Get Ready to Rumble. And they are very serious about that trademark.
That's boxing, you mean?
Boxing, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He says, let's get ready to rumble. And if you say, let's get ready to rumble at any kind of other event or in a commercial or in a movie or something like that, you've got to pay him.
Yeah.
Buffer Enterprises, by the way, who did trademark let's get ready for rumble, is now trademarking Michael Buffer's half-brother Bruce Buffer's expression that he uses for the UFC, which is, it's time.
Yeah.
It's time.
And not it's time, just it is time for the main event.
Now, how can you sue somebody for it's time? First of all, Doc, our newsman, has been saying that every time he heads to the bathroom with a newspaper under his arm.
Just to kind of warn
people that they need to set up a smell perimeter.
it's the only time he runs. He's running down the hallway. It's time.
I can't believe you can trademark something that, you know, is such a common combination of words as
and
that.
Has been said by millions of people for millions of, you know.
Yeah, come on.
Huh. Well, apparently they're doing it. Apparently they're trademarking it. So I guess
he's way better than his brother, the boxer announcer, by the way.
Oh, really?
Oh, he is? Really?
Oh, yeah, the UFC dude, man. I'm not kidding. If we fast forward through it, you know, it's probably 3 minutes that he takes to intro. He tells a city and he just. I've never heard an announcer go more over the top than he does. And I love it so much. Let's see here. Oksana Grigorevia. probably not saying that right.
Okay.
But that's the chick that Mel Gibson was his ex-girlfriend.
Yes.
She recorded the phone calls. She's going to do a sit-down interview. And apparently there's been a battle, you know, of all the different press outlets that want to get the interview with her.
Sure, of course. She's got the dirt on Mel Gibson.
60 Minutes is one of them. And that's a monster. I mean,
now, don't pay, right?
I don't think so.
They don't pay.
But they are they've been around for how long, Bean? Like 1,000 years?
Yeah, probably close to 30, I would imagine.
Oprah, apparently, is where she's going.
Well, that's a sympathetic ear, to be sure.
Nope. Yeah.
Yes.
She's, Nopra is right. She's not exactly going to grill her.
No.
So, apparently she's going to be on Oprah.
I don't know. I'm no huge fan of Oprah, but I don't think she's a particularly soft interviewer.
Well,
do you guys?
Compared to 60 Minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do.
But 60 Minutes is tough when you've broken the law or when you've got something to hide or something to explain. Oksana, I think, is the victim here.
Yeah.
And I think no matter what comes out, I mean, there are different interpretations of how she's handled this so far.
Right.
But it's not like she went out screaming at people and saying obscene things. You know what I mean? She's not on trial here.
But think about the difference in the if you go on Oprah, you've got this audience that's going to cheer for you and feel bad for you. 60 Minutes is a one-on-one, super intense. I mean, it's just a whole different experience.
Different vibe. No, you are right about that. Now, does she get to go to Australia? Does Oprah take her to Australia?
I don't know if that happens.
The Oprah Show is going to Australia.
All right, Snooki needs to go away. I think, are you over Snooki? I believe I'm over the Oompa Loompa, and we get story after story about all the different ways that these Jersey Shore kids are making money.
Yeah.
You know, situation we heard $5 million this year, $10 million next year. I mean, it's crazy the opportunities they have with appearance fees, with merchandise, with, you know, spinoffs and Now Snooki is writing a book.
Yes. And by writing a book, you mean talking to somebody else who's writing a book.
It's called A Sure Thing, S-H-O-R-E, See? A Sure Thing. It's going to be out in January, and it centers on a girl looking for love on the boardwalk. Of course, Snooki famously told the New York Times a couple months ago that she's only read two books in her entire life. One of them was Dear John, the Nicholas Sparks novel, and the other one was Twilight.
Everybody poops.
Those are the only two she's ever read, and now she's writing a book.
Look, she didn't even come up with that title. It's too clever for her.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of
it course. Is.
And she's not writing that book.
This is where you need a ghostwriter more than anything in the world. The guy behind the scenes that actually does the writing,
That's
guy or girl.
That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. I'm sure. And let me just also add, I understand if you're a Jersey Shore fan, we've talked about it. I mean, there's some pleasure in seeing people that retarded.
Yeah.
But if you buy the Snooki book, F you. F you to the new planet and back.
Here's all I know about Snooki based on my partner Bean's comments.
Can you imagine what's going on in Snooki's panties?
Oh,
that's
wow.
What it should be called.
Is that a chapter of the book?
Yeah.
Great.
Shut up, Snooki.
Great stars for today's celebrity birthday. The beautiful Oscar-winning actress Marion Cotillard. Anything you want to add about 35-year-old Marion Cotillard, Kevin?
Oh, he's furiously getting drops up. Hold on. Give me a second.
What are you talking about? You mean like...
Bonkers.
Yeah, you think her eyes are bonkers.
Yeah, her eyes are a little bonkers.
She's giant eyes.
And they're bonkers. They're a little bonkers.
Bonkers.
Beautiful eyes, though. Actress Fran Drescher is 53 years old today. Barry Williams from The Brady Bunch is 56. Monica Bellucci, how about that? 46 years old today. Tony Hale from Arrested Development turns 40 today. Actress Jenna Elfman turns 39. And Kieran Culkin is 28. Also, T-Pain!
Yeah.
We got to get some auto-tune on this show. Why don't we have an auto-tune? T-Pain is 26. And that is the Showbiz Beat. Trent Reznor joins us in studio in about 90 minutes or so right here on the Kevin and Bean Show talking about his new soundtrack for The Social Network. You know, he's contributed songs to soundtracks before, but this is the first time he's ever scored a movie. It's something he's been wanting to do for a real long time. So he's very, very passionate about this project. And it should be a lot of fun having Mr. Reznor by. Anyway, I don't think we've talked to him in a while. So that's coming up here on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Take a look at some of the emails you've sent us. You can write to all of us anytime. We do the best we can to get back to you. Can't promise, though, and all of our email addresses are at kevinandbean.com. Here's one. We always talk about how sometimes when you're not you're listening to the show, and then outside of listening to the show, you also think about us, and sometimes it screws your life up. Well, here's Adriana who says, I'm listening to a coroner's inquest online regarding a shooting that happened in my Las Vegas neighborhood. It's a very solemn and serious procedure, kind of sad, actually. But the DA keeps asking the witness, what did you do? All I hear is, what did you do? I can't stop myself. I start giggling every time I hear it. I don't want to. I just do. Thanks for nothing, Kevin.
What did you do?
Sorry about that.
We were talking about guys crying in embarrassing ways because Psycho Mike was given a speech as the best man at his wedding, at his friend's wedding.
Cried like a baby.
Ended up in a ball on the floor, yeah. And he was just sobbing.
Sucking his thumb
and kicking his feet. It was really embarrassing. So we took calls from people, and one of the other stories that we had was Dave the King of Mexico. He said he cried at...
So you think you can dance.
So here's what Carl says. What's up, guys and Lisa? Dave needs to be taken down by a sniper for crying at So You Think You Can Dance. That's the most meaningless show you could cry for. He's already a douchebag. Now he's a cream puff as well.
Aw. I'm going to take out Dave.
Look, he cried at that show. I mean, So You Think You Can Dance. I mean, really? Yeah. We took calls. No one beat that.
No. He's a winner.
That was the lamest thing anyone had cried over.
And
right?
I have one other. Ben writes, I cried at the end of Super Mario Galaxy. So.
Oh, come on.
And then he writes, so, yeah.
So that happened. Another debate that happened on the air while you were out on vacation last week, Kevin, is I was frozen in fear as to whether to spend my $4 to buy the new peanut butter Oreos at the supermarket when I saw them.
Now, frozen in fear?
He ended up passing on them.
He went home without them.
Is it because he's so cheap?
Yes. Because he couldn't buy those and the regular Oreos that he loves.
What do you mean no? You could have bought them both.
You could've.
No, it's not because I'm so cheap. It's just that I didn't want to waste them if they were bad. I didn't want to waste the food if they were bad. So I love the variations on the Oreos. I love the inside out Oreos. Of course, the double stuff are the best Oreo that there is. I like the Halloween ones that they come up with, the orange in the middle. I like the strawberry ones. I mean, they have a lot of great Oreo flavors. Peanut butter just just didn't sound right to me.
I just don't care at all.
But we got a lot of emails from people about that. Here's one from a teacher who says he listens to us religiously through the podcast. I heard you talk about the peanut butter Oreos. I got very excited. I'm a high school student. I have a peanut butter and jelly for lunch at my desk every single day. My students bring me jars of peanut butter instead of Starbucks cards around Christmas. In other words, I'm a huge peanut butter fan. I heard you talking about it. I stopped by on my way home from school, bought a bag, and, well, they're good, but the taste is stuck somewhere in the middle of two great tastes, peanut butter and Oreo creams. So they're good, but not amazing. I'll go ahead and finish the bag. From now on, I'll stick with the OG version 2.0, the double stuff.
Oh, no. Now what do you do, Bean?
Wow.
And another one on that topic. Dear Bean, I just caught the part of the peanut butter Oreo story saga from Monday's podcast. I've tried them myself, but if you're an Oreo guy, you owe it to yourself to try them too. Just like Callie once said, one of these days, they're not going to be there. And that's from JP, who listens to us up in Edmonton, Canada. So, again, now I'm split because one is saying don't do it. The other one is saying do it. I still can't decide what I'm going
to
do.
Speaking of people who listen to the podcast, I ran into a guy at the Muse show who said he lives in China.
Hey!
He lives in China.
Wow.
And he said, I listen to the podcast, so I'm at July 1st, so don't tell me anything that happened since then.
As though we could remember.
Right. I was like, I don't even remember what happened yesterday, so your secret's safe with me. Dear Kevin, this one begins. You know, for the longest time, I've been trying to make up my mind on contacting you guys or not. Anyway, I was wondering if you could help me understand why I can't listen to the Kevin and Bean show live on the internet anymore. 3 years ago, I moved to Mexico. And I would continue listening to the Kevin and Bean show over the internet without a problem. For some reason, this year the U.S. passed a law that forbids other countries to listen to certain content coming from the U.S. So that's what his understanding is.
That's why he thinks this happened?
Yes. That's not the case. Unfortunately, our company is a cheap company.
That's what happened.
And decided to save some money. So if you're listening outside the – I mean, so you can't listen outside the United States unless you find on one of the other stations. But it's either that or Arizona blocks the signal at the border. I'm not sure.
That is very possible. I'm not positive.
Mexico's excluded from the Kevin and Bean show.
I'm not positive.
We do have a terrific lineup of Kevin and Bean affiliate shows that are not affiliated with our company. And you can go, you know, you can find us just by doing a Google search and listen to us on one of those stations.
Oh, what a good idea. I never thought of that.
I'm sure they're delighted to pay for you listening in Australia. Dear Kevin and Bean, my final one begins. A couple years ago, I was at the Cannes Film Festival, and at a party, they were showing off a Star Destroyer fight scene from Episode 4, The Star Wars A New Hope, in 3D. Remember, we broke the news yesterday that George Lucas is going to re-release all the movies in 3D. Well, I can tell you right now, as someone who has seen it, it doesn't add a thing to the action. George Lucas is a terrible person. Omar needs to take him out right after he takes out the cast of Glee. Actually, now that I think about it, I think he needs to take out George Lucas first.
Wow.
Connor. So it's not enough that Connor just can't go see the movies. Not enough to ignore them. He needs to have George Lucas killed so that the movies are never made so that nobody can see them. And I think I respect his point of view.
He has passion.
You know what? That is odd. But those movies did create a level of passion that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's why people, they think it's theirs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're absolutely really, right.
That's unbelievable. And finally, Brett writes, what's going on with music? First, you play Bjork and her musical masterpiece.
Yeah.
With our fingers, we make million holes. We run and we fall into potholes.
Yeah, that's not, that isn't good. And then you play Yoko Ono. By the way, you won't believe me if I tell you this if you haven't seen the video yet, but this is real. She's at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and she's standing in front of a microphone, and this is her
song,
yes,
man.
Yes, this is her song.
But it does make the Bjork song sound good.
It really does. I mean, at this point,
at least it's got a tune and
Bjork's
some words.
A genius. She was smart to come out just before the Yoko Ono thing. And then you end with DJ Pauly D.
How come every time I'm DJing, there'll be a hot-ass girl, but she got an ugly-ass friend? Come on, man. I ain't got no time for that. I'm only dealing with nines and tens. Not no threes and fours.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to get into my DJ booth, and you're trying to come home with me, DJ Pauly D, then you and your friends better come correct.
That's right. You better come correct. That one's the worst, in my opinion.
I agree.
I think I'd take Bjork, and I would take Yoko. over that.
At least they try.
I'm not sure about that, but you just have to figure out which one is less torture.
Fringe is back for an all-new season. Episode 2 of season 3 or 4. Yep. I don't know where we are in the Fringe right now is on tonight. And we'll talk to Joshua Jackson, one of the stars of the show, coming up in about a half an hour here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Also, are you standing by? Are you under a doorway right now? Because today's the day the big one hits Southern California. So says one earthquake predictor who has never been right. We're trying to get him on the phone. And we'll also discuss the panic that his tweets have caused about the upcoming earthquake.
We did a story yesterday in the Showbiz Beat about Ozzy Osbourne. Now, there's been a lot of talk about his drug use because he really pretty much bogarted all of it in the 80s.
Whatever. Yeah. He did everything all the time, always.
Yes. And the story that he came out yesterday, he was talking to Britain's Sunday Times magazine, was that he cured his athlete's foot in the 80s with cocaine. He would pour cocaine on his toes.
Wow, he must have had a lot of cocaine hanging around.
Cure his athlete's foot.
Oh my God.
You can buy athlete's foot medicine. It costs nothing.
For a couple of bucks.
He said there was a problem. It was about $3,000 a toe.
He just had shakers.
Right, you would think, right? But so he would put it on his toes, and we decided that maybe we should talk to Ozzy and find out just exactly if this is true and what's going on with it. Good morning, Ozzy. Hey, it's Kevin and Bean. How are you?
It's Denims and Jeans.
Yes,
Denims and Jeans, Kevin and Bean, sir. Kevin and Bean. Ozzy, we were... No, just Kevin and Bean. We were talking... Yes, all right, Ozzy. Yes, then.
Is this Ozzy Osbourne?
Right. We were calling you because you're Ozzy Osbourne. We wanted to ask you about a story.
This is Ozzy Osbourne. I'm such a big fan. Nice to talk to you.
Okay. You're a big fan of Cleveland and Steve, are you?
Yeah. I can't hear you in Mexico anymore.
Right. That's true.
Okay. Listen, Britain's Sunday Times magazine, where apparently you have a health column, which we may have to ask about also. You reported this past Sunday that you used to cure athlete's foot back in the 80s by pouring cocaine on your toes.
That's what I used to take cocaine and put it on the toes.
Right.
And it would get your feet high.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And they would dance faster. And sometimes you go to sleep and your feet would still be up walking around.
Wow, that's cool. But it says in the report that you are curing athlete's foot. Not that you were making.
You could do it for anything.
You'd do both.
Yeah,
okay,
but for jock itch too.
Oh wow!
Cocaine.
Isn't that kind of a waste of what did that do to your junk, Ozzy?
It made my penis high.
It seems like, as Lisa pointed out, it would be far more economical to just buy a spray can of something that's made to cure athlete's foot or jock itch.
Well, sometimes when you're on the road. Back when I was touring with Hanson.
What? It wasn't Hanson.
You used to be in Hanson.
You've never toured with Hanson.
I was the little drummer.
No, you weren't the little drummer.
You were alive when you were touring.
Sometimes you're on the road, you're having a gold bond, so you have to take a bunch of cocaine.
But what, you have suitcases full? I mean, how much cocaine did you have in the 80s?
I had a tour bus that was made out of it.
Oh, is that right?
And what I knew, I would just chip off a little bit, and then I would just... But it's not a bumper.
That is a lot of cocaine, is what that is.
Well, back when I was touring with Chumbawamba.
You were never...
No.
You never toured with Chumbawamba.
Ozzy, what about the part where you said it cost about $3,000 a toe to cure your athlete's foot? I mean, that's a pretty expensive treatment.
Oh, a small price to pay for comfortable 50s.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess, but you could have done it for so much less, is all we're saying.
Well, I used to have a lot of money.
A lot of money, yeah.
And I would buy drugs, but it wasn't. We would split it, me and the other members of Yo Gabba Gabba. When I was
you never toured with Yo Gabba Gabba. You weren't even alive. They weren't even alive then.
When I was on the Dukes of Hazzard, we used to have...
What are you talking about?
Are you sure you're not on drugs now, Ozzy? You're not making any sense at all.
When I was Modest Yahoo, I
don't think Modest Yahoo would have toured with you, nor would he have done heroin.
When I was a Smurf, we used to be
All right. Well, listen, Ozzy, thanks so much for setting us straight on this story. It's good to know it's really true.
You can put cocaine in cookies, too. Once time I ate 497,000 of them.
You ate 497,000 cookies?
You did?
No, you, I thought you said you did.
That's a lot of cookies.
All right. Thank you.
Joshua Jackson from Fringe joins us coming up after the top of the hour here on the Kevin Bean Show. Then after that, it's Trent Reznor talking about his soundtrack for The Social Network. All straight ahead here on the show. Ralph Garman on vacation. We're filling in, taking turns here on the Showbiz Beat. It's Psycho Mike's turn. I know that's not anything anyone wanted to hear, but it comes up in rotation. We spin a wheel. What can we do?
Oh, wow. It's no wonder you guys have had such a great career. Wow. So clever.
Hey, Mike.
Oh, sons of bitches.
What's going on?
I'm excited about your showbiz.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Yeah. Appreciate it. Nick Cannon sucks. Like, really. I don't watch America's Got Talent that often.
Okay.
And Lord knows, I mean, I'm not the greatest host of television shows in the world. In fact, I'll probably get your show resoundingly canceled if you have me on. But he's the worst.
Is he? I haven't seen him host that show.
He's the worst.
Bean, do you back me up on that? Like,
no, he's terrible. He's so, I mean, he has no presence or ability to host a television program at all. I think he's only on because he's Mariah Carey's husband, and I think they're looking for reflected glory.
Most people are either they're smooth or they're, you know, kind of frenetic and energetic. Like a Jimmy Fallon pulls that off. He's not necessarily the smoothest guy, but he has a very likable charm because he's energetic.
Right.
He's neither, and he tries to fill with, like, over-the-top screaming, and he barely speaks English. He has no control of the language. He mispronounces everything. So he's the worst, but he's turning 30.
Okay.
Okay? And the rumors going around in Page Six, New York Post Page Six, about his 30th birthday party make me want to just kill myself because I don't want to be a part of this world. For $25,000, you can be a part of his gift bag.
What? He's charging people to somehow be involved in his birthday?
And it sounds like companies are lining up. Like, this is a big deal. And my point being, like, this isn't Angelina Jolie or Oprah, where I could even understand, you know, if you're an upstart company, you're like, hey, maybe if we get in the gift bag, people
so
be
he's pimping out his gift bag?
Let me just, Lisa, that's not only.
Let me just clarify. Yeah. The gift bag is you go to his birthday party and you give him a gift. And then when you leave as a guest, you get a gift bag? That's what this is?
Yes. Okay. And you know, I can understand if you're a jewelry maker or, you know, you own a hair product company or something, and there's a couple of your products in the gift bag, that's a great deal. But this is a man, and he's turning 30.
Yeah.
Like, stop
it. Come
on. Okay. But it gets way, way worse. For $25,000 more, you get 3 tweets about your product from the official Twitter account of the party!
What?
What's going on?
Not even from him, but from the party?
Yeah.
There's a Twitter account from the party.
Yeah, and for $25,000, you get 3 tweets, Kevin. 3 tweets.
That'd be so
worth
it. So
he's basically raising money.
Yeah.
For his
making
party.
So that he can have a super kick-ass party.
Because they don't have, he and Mariah Carey don't have enough money to throw him a party.
Correctamundo.
Wow.
The $1 billion that they have together... Not enough. So we need to have companies gather around and kiss their ass and wet their beaks.
I wish they'd just say no.
The guy's 30. Let's take that money and give it to the, I don't know, 10,000 30-year-olds that are in Afghanistan.
There you go.
What's going on?
Damn it.
3 tweets.
I rarely get this fired up about something. I mean, this really is angering.
All right. Come on. I mean, really, a tweet's worth about $8,500, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's pathetic.
A comic that I really liked passed away yesterday. Greg Giraldo passed away. It was an accidental overdose, they're saying, from prescription pills.
Did they say what kind? Is there any details?
No, I haven't seen any reports with actual details, but yeah, it's very easy to do that, to have accidentally have a bad cocktail of prescription drugs. People should really be careful when they're dealing with pharmaceuticals. But Greg Giraldo was a very, very smart and uniquely talented comedian who had a very... kind of strange and different take on things a lot of the time.
He was unique, and you can't say that about everyone.
And he will be missed. I know he was pretty much universally loved by all the people in the comedy community. So RIP to Greg Giraldo. He died at only 44 years of age.
Wow.
I have been an open critic of the idea of slaughterhouses, and I've been a big animal rights supporter, but I also love the steakhouse. It's kind of an American institution. It's where guys go to be macho and bond and stuff like that. In fact, A lot of NFL football teams, Lisa May, will have the rookie players go out and buy dinner for the veteran players. It's kind of a male macho bonding thing. And that's what happened when Cowboys wide receiver Dez Bryant, he's a rookie this season.
Right.
And he went out and took out a lot of his buddies on the Dallas Cowboys out to dinner at a nice steakhouse in Dallas. Right.
So far, so good.
What do you think you spend on 18 NFL football 18? Players at a steakhouse if one guy had to grab that bill, Kevin?
I don't know. How much is one steak dinner? Like, $25? $30?
But they're drinking, right?
They're going to a night. I mean, they're probably, I would imagine.
I was going to say like $3,000.
$3,000? Yeah, that's maybe a good guess, at least. Hey, Kevin, what do you think? You know, for 15, 20.
Including alcohol?
Yeah, he picked up the tab. He said, it's on me, guys.
45.
Good guess.
$4,500?
Yeah.
$4,500. And Bean, you have a guess there?
I was with Lisa. I thought 30 sounded about reasonable.
Okay. So, you know, let's see, 3,000 for Lisa and Kevin. Okay, you guys were close with $58,000.
Yay! How is that
I'm sorry, I misspoke. $54,896.
How is that possible?
It has to be the wine. Wine,
they must
right?
have ordered, I would imagine, like $1,000 bottles of wine.
Well, and also,
but cocktails don't add up like that unless they're like vintage. That's yep. why I was thinking the wine.
And I also think that earlier this season, you may remember that Dez Bryant, there was some controversy around Dez Bryant because he refused to carry the veterans' pads in training camp, which is something that's commonly done by the rookies. He actually just refused to do it. So maybe they were just giving him a little of his own medicine that and giving be. Back to him. But Dez's accountant slash agent, whose eyes probably flew out of his head when he saw the bill, he says Dez knew what he was doing when he got involved. He took responsibility for it. He made it he made the best of it. Nothing negative. He had a good time with the guys, bonding with his teammates. $55,000 later.
And a
give
rookie.
Him a breathalyzer!
I mean, I know that they signed big deals,
sure.
but you could be out in a year.
Yes,
you never
but Lisa
know.
May, he is making $2.8 million this season as a rookie startup.
Okay.
And
I guess he can afford that.
He's
and
exceptionally
you can write
talented,
it off.
And he looks like he has a lot of earning potential.
Okay.
Wow. Pete Wentz, another guy who sucks.
Yeah.
He's having some trouble with the breakup of Fall Out Boy.
Okay.
He went into a deep depression when the pop punk band split up.
No.
Says he was completely, quote, bummed out.
No.
Well, that is a deep depression.
The bassist, who has admitted that he suffers from bipolar disorder, admits to hitting rock bottom and growing a beard.
Oh, wait
to
a minute.
With the breakup. He grew a beard.
He grew a beard?
Yes.
Oh, that is serious.
What is going on?
He grew a beard.
Yeah.
Well, it's Fall Out Boy. That's about all. That's all he could do.
The
right?
other dude. What's his name? Patrick? The other dude.
Patrick Stump?
The other dude that's the lead singer, he's the talent of that band. He writes the songs, sings the songs, everything.
I've never seen a band where the bass player who doesn't sing vocals gets so much attention. Pete Wentz is he's just the bass player.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's more famous by far.
He was very
Hey, bud. I just got the new Fall Out Boy song on my B-Cast phone. It gets me pumped.
Give me a breathalyzer. And you guys did this story a little bit earlier, but I thought I'd touch on it again. Jersey Shore Guidette Nicole Snooki Polizzi is going to write a book.
With crayons?
Now, obviously, you know, she'll get a ghostwriter, blah, 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 blah. But what else is there to this book besides at age 20-something, I was on the show called The Jersey Shore. Let's take it from here.
I don't think it's an autobiography. I think it's a fiction book.
Fiction.
Quite a love story.
Oh,
quite a love
is this
story.
Like Lauren Conrad and her, her tale?
Oh, no.
As Which much revolves fun as, around okay. real-life experiences.
Now, as much fun as I was making, Lauren Conrad's book, like Lisa May said, which was loosely based on her own life being a reality star, was pretty successful.
Was it?
So
I don't know if it was good, but it was successful.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, Lord knows it doesn't have to be good to be successful, right. especially in the book world. But the Snooki book.
That's going to be nothing.
Come on, the Snooki book.
That's going to be crappy.
That's what I'm getting you for Christmas, all of you.
Cleverly, cleverly titled A Sure Thing.
See?
A Sure Thing, Kevin.
Because it's a sure thing. Lisa, sure.
That is clever.
Jersey Shore.
Gotcha. Celebrity birthdays. Monica Bellucci, who is one of the most beautiful women on the planet. She is 46 years old. Lacey Charbet, you may know her from Party of Five. Or Mean Girls. She was actually in Mean Girls. Fran Drescher, who was only good in Spinal Tap like 1,000 years ago. let's see here. Oh, Trey Anastasio, very, very talented musician. He is 46 years old. And that is the Ralph Garman Showbiz Beat.
First, though, give me a little Fringe music here. As you know, Fringe, one of the best shows on television, and it is into season 3 right now with episode 2 airing tonight at 9 on Fox. We couldn't be more excited to welcome back to the program Joshua Jackson, who, of course, plays Peter on the show. Hey, Joshua, welcome back, man. How are you?
I'm excellent, guys. How are you?
Very good.
We're doing great. I've been listening to Kevin off-air for the past hour try in his mind to figure out what he understands and what he doesn't understand about Fringe. You're one episode back, and I think you're already losing my man Kevin.
No. No, I have a grip on it.
Don't do it. It'll hurt you, but you'll get a brain cramp.
Joshua, let me run by you my theory, and then you tell me if I'm on the right track, okay?
Right. Okay. Of course, you know, because I work on a J.J. Abrams show, if you are on the right track, I'm going to lie to you.
You're
going
to have to lie. Okay.
Damn.
There's an alternate universe that exists at the same time as this universe. And you're from the alternate universe, but you didn't know it until just recently. But then Olivia, who of course is played brilliantly by Anna Torv, went over to the alternate universe, and then they kidnapped her, and they're trying to brainwash her into thinking that she belongs in the alternate universe?
Yes. Almost. You have to watch the next couple episodes. That's not quite what they're after with her, but yes, everything else is correct.
Oh, that's pretty good, though,
Kevin.
All right.
I'm good, especially for 7 in the morning.
For me.
Yeah.
At any time.
Especially for Kevin, right?
At any time of the day for me.
So what did you guys think as the actors? And I know you're used to crazy scripts. It's been that way since episode 1. But when they came to you and said, this is the direction we're going near the end of last season, did you think crazy, they're biting off more than they could chew, or did you see and share their vision?
Well, crazy, and they're biting off more than they can chew, and that's a good thing. Because I think we should always be swinging for the fences and trying to make the show as cool and as out there as possible. So, and I think we achieved the introduction of The Other Side by the end of last year, but I'm glad that they're still going way out there as opposed to getting safe and conservative going into our third year.
I got to tell you, though, swinging for the fences, if you're a bad hitter, it can backfire on you in a big way. But this show has been so out there from the very beginning, and yet the people that make the show are good enough that they can actually pull it off. That's what I love about it. It's not...
Well, that's a credit to our writers, is that that's true. But the truth of the matter is that there's enough mediocre television, right? We don't need to be another mediocre TV show.
Right, but listen, there are a lot of...
I think if we should swing for the fences, and if we're not good enough to do that, then they should take us off the air and put another mediocre show on. But if we do it, then that's cool to work on.
Well, you're nailing it so far, I'll tell you that.
How tough is it, though, to be on Thursday night at 9? I mean, obviously, that's the faith that Fox has in your show to put you on the toughest competitive time slot. But, I mean, you are up against giants at that hour on television.
And I'd like to say that we're standing on the shoulders of giants, but I think they're standing on us.
Well, you might get on top eventually.
We get whooped up pretty good, but, we've survived 3 seasons, so we must be doing something right. But yeah, we got our hat handed to us pretty good last week.
It's unbelievably tough. I mean, if I don't have it in front of me, but it seems to me that that's, Grey's Anatomy and that's CSI and maybe, I don't know, The Office. It just seems like Thursday night is everything, right?
And I give 30 Rock and or maybe Community. But yeah, I mean, somebody holds us down and slaps us silly every Thursday night.
I got to tell you, it's one
but,
of the...
We're still kicking, so it's all right.
It's one of the few shows. Not everybody doesn't have time for every show, so you have to pick.
What?
You have to pick the ones that you're going to keep up with
right.
and not let drop. And on my list is Fringe. That's one of those, because it's so great that you have to keep up with it. So I'm a little disappointed that it got slapped last week. Come on, people.
What? It happened, but the truth of the matter is, I wish I could be more disappointed that we got slapped around last year, but the truth of the matter is, we're still on the air.
And that's right.
And that's all that
matters. At this point, it's so long as we're telling good stories, I gotta believe that that's gonna serve us in good stead. And nobody from Fox is gonna like to hear me say this, but I agree with you. People have plenty of TV dates that they need, and so long as you're keeping up with our show somehow so you're current with the story, then I think we're gonna be okay in the long run.
Oh, I'm current with the story, but I'm not sure I understand it.
Hey, every working actor, Joshua, right now gets up in the morning and goes, at least I'm not on Lone Star. I mean, like you said, half the battle is just, no, I'm not making fun of them. That was a good show too, but I'm saying half the battle is just staying on the air. You're absolutely right about that.
You're totally right. Look, trust me when I tell you that we're, leaving aside talking about the show business of it all, as a guy who does a job for a living, on Tuesday morning when the word comes out, a little shiver goes through our set because that's a good show, and there's 75 people working on that show, too.
Yeah, yeah, very
they
sad.
They put, you know, everything behind it, and you go, God damn, it's nice to have a job.
Yeah. Right. We have actor Joshua Jackson on the phone with us here on the Kevin Bean Show. We're talking about Fringe returning tonight at 9 on Fox for episode 2 of the new season. Last week, we talked, and I got to be honest, we were way more excited about talking to Anna Torv. And as you can understand, by the way, and she was telling us how much fun it is as an actor to get to play the double character. You're the only one on the set who doesn't get to share that enthusiasm. What's that like?
I'm the no fun league. Well, let me tell you what else is fun. Having 7 days off every other week.
Nice.
Whoa. Oh, there you go.
That makes sense because there's an alternate character for every single person on the show except for you, yeah. For your character. You're the guy from the other side, though. So
I mean, well, I guess I technically am the alternate character.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, no, I think I do think that both Anna, well, all of them, Anna certainly looks like she's enjoying herself this year, and I know John has enjoyed playing Walt in it. So I don't get the actory fun, but the time off is pretty nice.
I bet it is. I bet it is.
I got to tell you, I love both Olivias.
Olivia and Bolivia?
Olivia and Bolivia,
the hope is that people will be sort of conflicted about which Bolivia they want.
Yeah.
All right. Last question for you.
I want both. Is that, can I have that, or is that putting my hand in the cookie jar?
That's an option on the menu.
Okay. All right. Good.
Last question for you, Josh.
We'd like to provide that for you.
All right. Good.
You mentioned J.J. Abrams, who has just been responsible for some of the most brilliant TV and movies of the past few years. And we always wondered with Lost, for instance, if they really had it all mapped out or if they were making it up as they went along and hoped to be able to end in a satisfying way. I hope Fringe is a long way from being over, but do you think that they've really got this thing nailed down in terms of where it's going, or do you see the writers furiously going, okay, what do we do now?
I think, and I don't know about Lost, but I'll take an educated guess. I think, much like our show, there is an overarching idea of where the show goes, of what the mythology is, but on an episode-by-episode basis, we sort of fill that in as we go along, if that makes sense.
All right, so
yeah. I think they know where they want to take the story. I think they know what the end is, and I think they know what a couple of the sort of major milestones along the way are.
Right.
But I think as we do each season, I mean, TV's a scramble. You're doing sure. crazy hours and trying to crank out 22 good shows, and so if they tell you that they know exactly what they're doing all the time, they're lying. I'd be lying.
I have a clip, and this is one of the I think overarching ideas on the show, and you can tell me if this is the direction that it's heading for the conclusion. Where that was a confusing question, wasn't it? But that
I'm only one cup of coffee into this.
Sorry about that. I apologize.
Really simple. No words bigger than two.
Here's
syllables.
A clip of Peter talking about what's happening.
Walton had took me over there because he said he needed me to help him fix the damage on the other side.
But you believed he was lying to you.
Yeah, he never had any intention to fix the other side. He wanted me to help him destroy ours.
So one of the big themes is the war between the alternate universes. Is that where this is heading this season? And do we see any of that tonight?
That, I don't know.
Okay.
My level of clearance is not high enough.
All right, so I don't tell you anything. All right.
But I know that that idea is the... That's what's going on for Peter, certainly, in this entire season. But I think, you know, if last season was the season of dealing with Walter's guilt about kidnapping his son,
sure.
or his not-son, and then the other side, this season is the season of Olivia's, right?
Olivia's, right.
The two Olivias. So I think that's what Peter's thinking about is this machine and the death on the other side and that. But really, the show is not focused on that. The show is focused on dealing with the hers.
Can you tease gotcha. Us about tonight, about what's going to be on it, or will you get killed by J.J. Abrams?
I may get put in the ejector seat. I can tell you that there's a show called Fringe that's on tonight.
Love it.
I can tell
okay.
you that I'm in it.
Right. All right. I could have told you that.
I can't really tell you that.
We don't have to talk to you to get that.
9 o'clock tonight on Fox. It's a brand new Fringe. Joshua Jackson, always great to have you on the Kevin Bean Show, man. Thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my God, there's an earthquake. Has it happened yet? Has it hit yet?
No.
Are you dead yet?
Not yet.
Has what hit yet?
The big earthquake. Today is an earthquake scheduled for today, Kevin. 6 to 7, likely in Southern California. 90-something percent chance.
Wait, they schedule them?
Yeah, absolutely. They're scheduling. Now, here's the news report from a Los Angeles TV station yesterday.
Well, the world's top earthquake experts say a widely spread prediction, one I fell for, by the way, about a major quake hitting Southern California tomorrow is just a big hoax.
Yeah, some people might have believed
it. It's scary,
and you just never know. The prediction was sent out via Twitter to thousands of people.
It then spread all over the internet. The bogus report predicted a high probability of a magnitude 6 to 7 quake, but seismologists say there is no reliable way to predict a big earthquake tomorrow or any other day for that matter.
If only there were a way, that would be fantastic, but...
So don't believe it.
Nope.
Let me tell you who gets the last laugh when you're all in the ocean after the earthquake later today, Kevin, is our man Luke, who is from quakeprediction.com, who sent out the tweet yesterday that started all the controversy, and he joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hey, Luke, how are you, man?
Hey, good morning.
You're still standing. So far, so good, right?
Yeah, it should hit today or tomorrow, most likely today, 98% chance.
You're actually disappointed you're still standing, right?
a 98% chance.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, what are your qualifications? Because the people at Caltech and everywhere else are all saying you can't predict. How are you able to predict?
Well, I've been researching this for almost 5 years. December 2005 is when I started researching it, and...
Caltech's been doing it a lot longer than that.
Well, I'm getting results. Back in the Mexicali quake, I predicted 6.0 to 7.0 on the first, and of course it happened 3 days later, but I fixed that problem in the model, and we should get this one on a time.
So what's your methodology?
I use frictional heating. There's you've heard of the earthquake lights, right? I mean, that's a fact.
No, I don't know what that is. Sorry.
Yeah, earthquake lights, they occurred before the China quake on May 12th. That was the rainbow in the clouds. Sometimes it occurs as a people say there was UFOs down in Chile before that quake back in February 27th.
Oh, so there's always some type of weird lighting in the sky that people notice before an earthquake?
Well, that's just part of the electromagnetic spectrum. That's the visible part. But there's also the infrared, the ultra-low frequency, and the radio waves. And I monitor the infrared part of the heat part of that and the surface temperatures.
Luke, a lot of our listeners that listen to the Kevin and Bean Show around the country may not know this, but there was an enormous and very impressive double rainbow over the skies in Southern California yesterday. Not a joke. I mean, everybody was taking pictures of it and whatnot. Is that the type of thing? I mean, do you think that is
absolutely
a factor in what you're talking about? Yeah.
Absolutely. That was trending on Twitter yesterday, and that, of course, rainbows are caused mostly by the sun's interaction with the raindrops, but the raindrops and the electromagnetic energy that's escaping from those faults caused an enhancement of those rainbows all over LA.
So your tweet was, major earthquake warning, 6.0 to 7.0 earthquake, likely in Southern California, September 30th. Please retweet. And then millions of people retweeted it. And then all the people who are experts in earthquakes said that it's a hoax, that there's no way to do it, and that you can't predict, and they wish they could, but they can't.
Luke, you obviously are taking this very seriously, and I don't fault you for that because it's a serious topic, but what kind of reaction have you gotten from other earthquake experts about your methodology? Do they say it's flawed, or do they agree you're on to something, or what?
Well, some people are listening, but of course, most people, even the tectonic plate movement back in the 60s was disputed, but finally it was accepted in the early 70s, and that was brought forth by a meteorologist. And of course, things change slowly, you know. I mean, people won't accept this probably for a while, but when they see the results after the earthquake today or tomorrow, they'll start thinking.
Now, wait, is it today or tomorrow? He said it was a 98% chance today.
Yeah, if you look at the site, it's 98% today, and I think it's
97. That's true. All right.
So if we don't have a major earthquake in Southern California by the weekend, you are actually going to be surprised, right? You think it's far more likely that it will happen than not.
Absolutely. In fact, we have a 4.3 earthquake to the northeast of the LA area, and usually you get a significant earthquake to the northeast of a quake just before it happens.
Right. We did some research on that type of earthquake. Right, Beaton? Do we have the numbers for that?
Well, I mean, as you know, Luke, there are thousands and thousands of earthquakes in the Southern California area every single year. I guess several hundred are greater than a 3. About 15 to 20 each year are greater than a 4. So one could say, hey, today's 4.3 out there in Death Valley is not untypical because that happens 15 to 20 times a year. But you're also right that they do tend to come in swarms. There are foreshocks and aftershocks. So at this point, I guess we still don't know what this one is, if it's an isolated incident or if it's going to lead to something bigger.
Yeah, they usually occur to the northeast of the main quake, either within 24 hours of the main quake. So that 4.3 near Scott's Castle, California, is telling me that everything's on schedule.
Are you a scientist?
I used to work for a private weather company back 5 or 6 years ago, but
do you have a degree?
Research is on my own.
You have a degree in anything?
I quit school back at the University of Minnesota because everything was too slow. They're just too slow for me, so I do my research and read my books. I read books.
Good for you. I'm with you on that, man. I think education is for losers. I really do believe that.
There's a lot of great people out there, but it was just too slow for me, so I sped up my research by myself.
Luke, we're almost out of time. QuakePrediction.com is the website if you want to follow along with what Luke's doing. I have to ask if you think it's some people have said maybe it's irresponsible to cause a panic by a tweet like this that obviously does speak to a real fear that a lot of people have who live in areas that are prone to earthquakes. Is that something that you consider? Do you think you're doing a service by giving people a heads up?
Well, I have over 15,000 people that follow me on Twitter and Facebook, so the reason why they follow me is because I've been right in the past, so they consider this a valid forecast.
So what would you advise people to do if they're taking your prediction to heart? What should they do today to prepare for that earthquake?
Well, hopefully they already have extra food, gas, and water on hand, and then hopefully it'll be a 5.8 instead of 6.5.
I mean, but would you say you're so certain of it that people shouldn't go up into real tall buildings and things like that? They should literally change their plans for today, expecting this earthquake to happen?
Well, I'm looking at the water vapor loop right down in Southern California, the National Oceanic Administration .gov satellite, and shows a large thunderstorm over the Salton Sea, which has me concerned because if that quake occurs there, of course it could trigger the big one.
Okay. Right. All right. Well, I'm fascinated by this. I mean, I have to, at this point, go side with the experts who say quake prediction is impossible. But having said that, I'm going to wait and see what happens. And perhaps we can talk to you again in a couple of days, Luke, and see how it's going for you.
Yeah, we'll talk to you in a couple of days.
All right. If we talk to you on Monday, and there hasn't been a 6.0 to 7.0 in Southern California, will you admit that you're full of crap? That's an honest question. That's an honest question.
There would absolutely be an earthquake above 5.5 by Monday.
Above 5.5. Okay, so now it's not 6 to 7. Now it's 5.5 to 7.
No, it's 6.5 to 7.0 is likely. And, of course, a 5.8 is 5.5 or larger is even more likely. So.
Okay, so there's not a 5.5 by Monday, you will admit that you're full of crap.
Let's watch and see.
But I'm saying let's take for granted nothing happens. Hey, Kevin and Bean, I'm full of crap.
It'll happen.
Okay. All right.
All right. All right. Very good, Luke. We appreciate the time. We know you're very busy this week in particular. QuakePrediction.com is the site. I hope you're wrong, but thank you for joining us on the Kevin and Bean Show. We enjoyed talking to you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. That's a hoax, people.
He's studied. He's read books.
Do you feel that?
He did read books.
You feel that?
He doesn't have a degree. He's not a scientist.
But some of these rogues that go off on their own, they come up with stuff. They're really smart people.
But then when you see the experts come out and say, this guy can't predict earthquakes.
Yeah, I know.
Stop it.
All right. If there is a 5.5 or above, Kevin, will you admit that you're full of crap on Monday?
I'll admit that on any day.
You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show on a very special Thursday. Our friend Trent Reznor is here and will be joining us in just a few minutes on the Kevin and Bean Show to talk about the Social Network soundtrack, which is available, by the way, an unbelievable deal. Just $2.99. $2.99 through Amazon.com. What's up with that? Trent can't make any money off that. Come on.
He's been giving away music for free for a while, by the way.
I know he has. We'll definitely get into that. He has his finger on what's going on. All right. We're talking about earthquake predictions. You just heard Luke on from QuakePrediction.com. We're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Look, that news piece that we played a few moments ago before we brought Luke on, you heard the newscaster say, I got that tweet and I retweeted it.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that about,
by
the way?
But then Caltech, they're the experts in this.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. They say you cannot predict earthquakes. This is a hoax.
I don't necessarily think that this guy is right, but I do know that there are like these super smart people and going to school or not doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Right.
That come up with stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't really believe him, but I reserve the chance that he might be right.
I think if there's an earthquake today, it'll be the luckiest thing that's ever happened because I think he has zero skills in this.
Yeah.
I mean, Caltech, they do this. They study this all year long. And they're scientists, and they have degrees and all that.
Yep, that's true.
Well, I'm with Lisa that education is for losers, though. I much prefer a guy who hasn't been tainted by the system, man.
Hey, I just got an email from a school counselor saying, thanks a lot, guys. Now I'm going to get a lot of students who are all scared now because of that guy's prediction. And by the way, that fear is what drove everyone to retweet that yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, it was retweeted millions of times. Dr. Drew retweeted it.
Well, yeah, what's up with that? What are people exactly supposed to do?
Stock up, man,
if they think,
and head for the hills.
Well, I would think I would think if I believed it, and we'll get right to your calls. Chris, you hang on. We'll go to you first. I would think that if you really believe there's a 98% chance of a major earthquake in Southern California today, you would go out of your way to not put yourself in situations that would be inherently dangerous to you if that earthquake hits. Don't stand somewhere where you're likely to get, you know, collapsed boxes on you or something.
Dude, if I believed that 100%, I would leave.
Yeah. I drive away.
I would drive somewhere else. Vegas, for example. I'd go a day early. All right, let's talk to Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Trent, Lisa.
Hi.
Kelly Bean.
So you believed our guest, you're saying?
I do. I mean, if he's been right in the past before.
He says he's been right. I don't know his record. Do you, Bean? Well,
I don't. True. I mean, the Mexicali one that he gave on the air, I haven't had the time to go back and look, but he says he was predicting an earthquake of a certain size, and it did happen the next day in the area he was talking about. See, so I don't know. Maybe he got lucky. But
here's the problem with these guys, Chris, and let me just put this out there. They expand the reach of their original, like he'll take credit for San Diego or San Francisco. And if it's a 4.9, he'll take credit for that. But thank God it wasn't bigger.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's how they make it fit.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I mean, like you said, he has 15,000 followers on Twitter. I mean, people must be listening to him for a reason. He must have had to be at least right once in the past. You know what I mean?
No.
And it seems like
Wait a minute. I totally disagree with that. He could have that many people based on fear and not have ever been right.
That's true. That's true also. But you got to, I mean, I'm in at least willing to give him the benefit of the doubt here.
So what are you going to do?
It seems like whenever we have these like big earthquakes for a while, for a few months back, we were having like a continuous series of earthquakes like randomly here and there.
But that happens all year, every year in Southern California.
Yeah, I know, but it seems like it usually happens when like it starts to get really, really freaking hot, or we have like a really big heat wave, and then it kind of starts to cool down like really quick.
Right.
That usually seems like we have an earthquake. Like,
well,
I
know it may seem like that, but hold on one sec. They've done a lot of research on that, and the experts, the scientists who do this for a living, who have studied it their whole lives, have concluded there is no such thing as earthquake weather. You get earthquakes in super cold weather sometimes. You get earthquakes in super hot weather sometimes. Sometimes it's raining. Sometimes it's not. So there is nothing to that. But look, it's a fear that everybody who lives within the range of an earthquake has, and I understand why it gets your attention if somebody is predicting it. All right, we don't have much time, but let's talk to Kiki. Kiki's on line 6. She believes it. Kiki, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. What's going on?
Hi. Hey, Lisa.
Hi.
Okay, so I'm freaking out about it because think about it. In any movie you've ever seen, like whenever no one believes him, and you know,
The dude's always right when they don't believe him in the movies.
You're absolutely right about that. Why aren't we living our lives like they do in the movies?
But Kiki, yeah, I'd like to suggest that you're basing your fear on movies.
I base my life on movies. What are you talking about?
What's wrong with you?
It's real.
What's wrong with you?
Another good question.
We'll barricade myself underground, and you guys will all be dead, and we'll see who's right then.
Kiki's going to get the last laugh. How do you like her now, Kevin?
Well, we won't know because we'll be dead.
I'm going to be knocking on her door. Let me in. No,
we will be the only one safe. So good on you.
Thank you,
Thank you,
Kiki. I hope you're wrong, but thank you. Let's take Tony real quick, and then we have to go. Tony is preparing. He believes in the earthquake prediction. He's got a plan. Tony, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, you got to believe in it. So I'm making a pit stop right now, 7-Eleven, picking up a couple beers, going to work, going to get drunk at work, try and get some threesome theories going on.
So you're going to work the whole, hey, we're all going to die, so let's go out with a bang.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, I like that.
So, he's going to go out with two bangs, it sounds like.
I like that. So beer and a threesome is your plan.
Yeah, and my wife works near the ocean, so she'll drop off. She won't know.
Okay, all right. You got the whole thing planned out. This is going to be the best day of your whole life, Tony.
Oh, I'm stoked.
That's a solid plan. Nothing could go wrong with that. ROQ, it's the Kevin and Bean Show, and this weekend, what am I doing this weekend, you ask?
Well, dying an earthquake today, I think.
I hope not. I'm going to Las Vegas.
MGM. Well, that's not like you. You haven't been there since last weekend.
MGM Grand, Frozen Fury, Los Angeles Kings play the Colorado Avalanche. Hockey is back.
You go every year, right?
I love it so much. And there's also a celebrity poker tournament on Friday night, tomorrow night.
Wow, that is your deal.
By Luke Robitaille. And he has a charity, Echoes of Hope, that he's raising money for. So if you are interested in that or you're going to Las Vegas, you can check that out. Most of the team plays. So you'll be sitting next. I sat next to Matt Green last year. I was like, what happened to your nose, dude? You should get that straightened out.
Can you still buy tickets for the game and can you still get into the charity tournament?
I believe.
Okay, that's good. That's great news.
There's some great information, right? It's the world-famous K-Rock at 7:55.
All right, we're going to do a very abbreviated showbiz beat here. Kevin Amin filling in for Ralph Garman. He's on vacation. The reason we're in a hurry is because we can't wait to get to our next guest. It's always a pleasure to catch up with Mr. Trent Reznor. He'll be on talking about his new soundtrack for The Social Network, so we'll get right to that. Since we have a music legend in the building, let me give you the top...
Come on,
fantastic.
Now. And that should happen. And
I agree.
They're not giving numbers, but they're saying a pretty big offer, whatever that
okay.
is. So I'm down with that.
I'll buy that, absolutely. some casting news for some upcoming movies you may be interested in. Natalie Portman apparently is going to be the lead in a film called Gravity. Robert Downey Jr. stars in it. It's a fascinating plot line, by the way. It's about a female astronaut, like women can go to space, who is stranded aboard a space station when disaster strikes. And Robert Downey Jr.'s character has to figure out a way to get her back to Earth. So that's a great role for Natalie Portman. I love her so much.
I got to tell you, I love her, and I could watch him in anything.
Yeah. It's a great combination.
Josh Holloway, who of course you remember as Sawyer from Lost, has joined the cast of the new Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movie that just started filming yesterday. Ving Rhames is in the movie again this time. Simon Pegg also will be returning. But Josh Holloway, if you're wondering what he was going to do after Lost, apparently he's going to be making it in the movies. And James Franco is going to star. He's a terrific actor, too, by the way. He is going to star in a movie based on the popular book by Stephen Elliott called The Adderall Diaries. This is about an author with writer's block who starts taking Adderall, which is a drug that they give people to settle down, people who have the ADHD.
Right.
It's a combination of amphetamines that ramps up normal people into the stratosphere. Apparently, it's like taking meth. And I don't know too much about this Adderall, but when I read the pitch for this movie, I thought, I need to take that.
I need to try that.
Because I get nothing done in my life. I just wake up and it seems like 20 minutes later it's time to go to bed. Where's my day going? Mike, what do you think about me on the Adderall?
I think it's a great idea. You should double the dose.
Really?
Well, you're a big guy, yeah. So you got to take that into account.
I think we need to let's have a conversation on that if we have time tomorrow, because I know that a lot of people are on Adderall, and I understand it is very, very good stuff. Remember when the listeners talked me out of meth?
Yeah.
I ended up not doing the meth.
Yeah.
I wanted to try it because, again, for the same reason, I want to get stuffed up. Maybe Adderall is my answer. So
humor me and bring that up to Dr. Drew later on in the show.
Yeah, okay. That's a great question because we're going to talk to him in about an hour and a half. Yeah.
All right, today's celebrity birthdays, no one I care enough about to read when Trent Reznor is in the next room. We'll take a quick break and come back with our guests right after this on the Kevin and Bean.
This is Trent Reznor.
I hurt myself today.
Reznor, what if your name was Ass Whore?
What if your name was Vagina Patterson?
By the way, you get all the credit in the world for not hitting him in the face for that question, Fred. Well done, my friend.
Do
well done.
Could you forget that?
That's probably the first time you've ever been asked what if your name were Assorb. Hey, listen, if you're wondering what has Trent Reznor done for me lately, I'll tell you what he's done. He has scored the movie called The Social Network that is available in theaters tomorrow. The soundtrack is out now. You can go to Amazon.com, as I mentioned moments ago, and get it for just $2.99. That's the deal of the century right there.
It really is.
How much did you have to do with that, Trent? You did all the music. You did all of the music, the score for the movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how much? It must have been weird for you, a guy who's kind of a control freak, if you don't mind my saying so, to be kind of an employee, and you're working on. You're not the boss. You're not the ultimate boss. You don't get to set the price. Did you have much control over that when it comes out?
In terms of the actual soundtrack record?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sony actually came to us and said, would you be interested in putting this out yourselves, like we did with the last Nine Inch Nails stuff?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, so that was very flattering, and also it allowed us to kind of think, okay, for a soundtrack record, how can we get it out to people and make it interesting? And the main thing is, when we finished working on the film, and that's Atticus Ross is my co-conspirator on this.
Right.
Awesome name, by the way.
It's a good name, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, he has a whole family of great names, but there's a whole other show dedicated to that. Well, we finished the film and realized we had a pretty cool record that stood on its own, so we just tried to come up with a way to put it out that the most people could get it. And
you've done it for free on your website a couple of albums, haven't you? Did you do that with Ghosts?
Yeah, we've tried a few different things. With the Ghost record, we had a quarter of it you could get free, and then you could get the whole thing for just a few dollars and a lot of different varieties. The next record, The Slip, is just free. There's no options to that.
And you had super high-quality downloads, too, as well, not just...
Yeah, we just offer what you might want. You know, yeah. It really comes down to just thinking about what you might want as a consumer and giving people that option for change.
You know, so. Have you ever done the math on how much per hour you got paid to do the Social Network score if you're selling it for $2.99 for the whole album?
Yeah, I've made minus $6 an hour.
How does that work? How did you get contacted by it? And then what's the process like to come up with music for a movie?
Well, I've been interested in actually properly scoring a film for years.
You have?
And I hadn't really acted upon it. And last fall, I got a call from David Fincher, who I've known for a variety of reasons over the years.
He did a video of yours, too.
Yeah, he did the only video for us. We had some music in Seven of the opening credits. And we had talked a few years ago about another project that never got off the ground, which was a musical version of Fight Club.
Right.
It sounds like I'm in Spinal Tap when I say that.
sounds like a joke, but okay.
I'm telling you, it would be really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
You
got to trust me on this.
If done by the right people,
yeah,
it would be
exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. So he called and said he was working on this film, and would I be interested in scoring? And I said yes, but I said it a bit prematurely. I'd just gotten off tour. I'd just gotten married. And I wanted to take some time off just to get centered, because I was kind of losing focus as to what was happening in my life and my brain.
So did you say yes and then for a second go, well, wait a minute, I
said I'm interested.
Yeah.
I read the script. The script was excellent. We met. We talked. I did some soul searching, and I thought, you know, I'm just not in the place where I think I can do the best work. So I made it terribly. I got back in touch with them and said, look, I can't give you my best work. I have to sadly pass on this, you know. But it worked on me for the next few months, and it just kept nagging at me. And then I started working on some material, and we did the How to Destroy Angels record, and all the circuits were turned back on. And I got back in touch with him, and I said, look, I'm sorry I said no to that, and please keep me in mind for the future, and I just want to let you know that it wasn't the material, and it wasn't you, and, you know.
Oh, so you knew he already had to move on.
Yeah, cause because a few months had gone by. He then shot the movie. So late winter of this year is when I got back in touch with him, and he said, hey, still waiting on you to do it. Let's go, you know?
What?
How about that?
What was his plan? He knew you were going to come through?
I don't know what the other plan was.
Wow, that's weird.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it worked out great for me because I went back. He had now shot the film. I saw a very rough edit. We spent a lot of time talking about it and kind of what he wanted to see from this thing. And then Atticus and I spent about 2 or 3 weeks generating ideas that kind of felt in the mold of what we thought he wanted, and he responded great to him, and the lion's share of our work was done right there.
That has to be really different for you, who you're used to coming up with music with something out of nothing, and now you've got a movie, and it kind of has to fit what's on the screen, and it has to fit the director's vision, and that's very different.
I'll tell you what was cool about that is I really enjoyed working under somebody.
You did?
Yeah. I loved having...
that's not what he meant. Go ahead.
For a minute, I forgot where I was. Yes, I thought I was having a rational discussion with adults.
Jeez. You know, don't mistake us for adults.
Anyway, it was a rewarding process. I mean, because the relationship between David and myself was one of respect. You know, I love what he does, and he seemed to love what I do. And it was an interesting, different way to work under a new discipline, and I really enjoyed the process.
Yeah, I imagine it's like it's – I mean, you still get to be involved in music, which is your passion, but it's flexing a completely different muscle. I would imagine that would make you feel so good. And frankly, you should be very, very proud of yourself. I mean, look, everybody who wants to score a movie isn't able to do it. They are not the same skills that are involved in being in a rock band and writing rock or electronic songs and being able to score a movie. So, you know, good on you. Were there times where you would submit music to David Fincher, who is a genius, by the way, in film, but I don't know how what his musical taste is like, where he would have to try to steer you in another direction and he would come back to you and go, it needs to be sadder or it needs to be scarier? I mean, are those the kind of general terms that he would give you and kind of send you back into the lab to try to meet that vision?
Well, his words have more syllables in them when they come back with comments, but for sure.
Sadder is none of...
Yeah, I had my thesaurus out for a while just to kind of decode some of the things he was saying. But no, he very much had a lot of comments. And, you know, it was a collaboration, but it was very much me wanting to provide him with what his vision for the film was. Because he's the kind of guy that when he gets into a film like this or anything, he has a pretty clear idea of what he wants. And it's not winging it, you know. So
we have Trent Reznor in the studio. We have to take a break. But when we get back, I want to ask you why he thought of you when he was doing this movie. Because, you know, when I think about this movie, I wouldn't think it would be, I don't know, I still don't think of it as a dark movie. I didn't see the script or anything, but it just seems like an odd fit a little bit. So I want to ask you that when we get back. Trent Reznor is in the studio, and we will be right back on the Kevin and Bean.
Very special Kevin and Bean show going here today. The Social Network soundtrack is available now. The movie comes out tomorrow, and the man behind the soundtrack, the co-conspirator of the Social Network soundtrack, is a man named Trent Reznor, and he is in our studio right now and didn't leave during the song there. So we're very pleased to still have Trent with us. Kevin, wasn't it a Nine Inch Nails concert that you bailed? Was it Omar's wedding reception that you left like immediately to go to see Tread at the Bowl or something?
It was Mike's.
Yeah.
It was my wedding.
It was Mike's wedding. Yeah.
Mike's wedding that you bailed on to go see Nine Inch Nails, right?
And they were playing at the Hollywood Bowl. I was like, dude, I can stay just until this time, and then I got to go.
Look, I love you and all, but still.
That wasn't insulting to me. What was hurtful was that I couldn't go with him.
See, but you could have.
By the way, as it turns out,
in retrospect, he should have.
Yes. He should have.
No question about that.
Rather than get a divorce.
Now, all right. When we left, I wanted to ask you, why did David Fincher think of you when he had this script?
Because I'm a genius.
Well, short answer.
No, I really don't know. I mean, I guess I should say, when he first contacted me and said, would you like to score this movie? Yes, was the answer. It's a movie about Facebook.
Really? Maybe you pause?
Yeah. Maybe not.
No, but I mean, I had a natural sense of hesitation, wondering what that could be, you know?
Right.
And I was vaguely aware of the backstory of the founding of Facebook, but not in depth. And I hadn't read the book that this is kind of based on, this film.
Right.
But shortly thereafter, I got the script that Sorkin wrote, and it's genius. I mean, it really
is. Aaron Sorkin, who is a genius writer.
Yes, unquestionably. And I saw that this wasn't a movie. It's not about Facebook. It's not about people sitting around using Facebook. You know, it's a story that's very intriguing about entitlement and greed and very human, kind of dark story of betrayal.
It sounds like there's a lot of backstabbing. And anytime there's something that creates an enormous amount of money in a short amount of time, it seems like there's bad things happen.
And then I thought, why is David approaching me? And then I thought, I think we could do something pretty cool here. So that's
okay. So that's
so
the answer.
Voila.
So that's the end of the answer right there.
You mentioned you had been wanting to score a movie for a long time, Trent. Is that because there are movie composers that you are fans of? Because, you know, there are a lot of people out there who are really excited if they see that John Williams does a score or Thomas Newman does a score or any number of other great guys out there that are doing it. But is that a genre of music that you've enjoyed in the past?
It's mainly from the point of really enjoying film. I like film as a medium and a medium of storytelling. I'm a huge fan of film. I'm not a huge soundtrack fanatic type guy, and a lot of times when I watch films, I realize I'm not paying any attention to the music at all. You know, unless it's excellent and it calls my attention to it, or it's terrible and it calls
in a culture to
each other. No, but there are some guys from Cliff Martinez to Howard Shore to my friend Clint Mansell who I think do excellent work. But my interest in it really was, I just thought it would be an interesting challenge to see if I could work in that medium.
Sure. We have had a good relationship with the great film composer Danny Elfman for so many years, who's done, you know, all the Tim Burton films and so many other great movies. I mean, he's that guy's a genius. And a lot of people may not even remember now that he was in a rock band for 20 years. It was enormously popular, Cuddo Engo Boingo. And I remember we've talked to Danny over the years, and he just – once he got into the soundtrack world and saw the possibilities of that, he left rock music behind. I don't get the impression he misses it for a minute. Like, that's another life to him. I can't see you doing just this. I mean, it's nice that you have the ability to do both, but I mean, I guess there is something captivating about it once you get into that editing room and start putting your music to images. It's really creating art.
Well, this experience working with David Fincher has been excellent, you know, and it's been something that really felt like a collaboration. There was mutual respect, and I don't have anything bad to say about it. And if everything was like this, yeah, I could see myself saying that sort of thing.
Right.
But there's a side of me that really enjoys what I do in terms of Nine Inch Nails and How to Destroy Angels, my other band, that I don't see that. I don't see film work replacing that necessarily. And at the moment, they're complementing each other, and it's great. And, you know, ask me in a couple of years. And
if everybody was David Fincher, maybe.
Yeah, and I don't have enough experience to tell you, you know, right, anything else, but it's been pretty great. So
but you're not likely to be doing Hotel for Dogs 2, the soundtrack. I don't think you're going to go into it that way.
That's not my intention at this moment.
Things will have gone terribly south if you're doing
that, right. Speaking of the visual medium, it was big news this week about Year Zero going to HBO in the future. What can you tell us about that? This is an album that you put out that had a story to it, and they're talking about actually making a miniseries out of it, or a movie, right?
I apologize. We need to take a break. I'm sorry.
Oh, come on. We're just talking to the guy about the thing.
I know about the thing. I know. But
can he answer this thing and then we take a break? Because we got plenty more
just
questions.
Forget it. He's gone. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Trent Reznor and we'll find out about his TV project.
106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q and it is 8:38.
And the gentleman who covered that great Johnny Cash song, Trent Reznor, is here in studio with us here on the Kevin Abid Show. The Social Network soundtrack is out. We're going to play some clips from it here in just a minute and tell you how you can buy it cheap, cheap, cheap. First, though, right before the break, Kevin, what was our question for Mr. Reznor?
Year Zero.
Year Zero. Oh, Year Zero. Yeah. Year Zero. What's the deal here, Trent?
Well, the reality is I was doing an interview recently for Social Network, and this question came up from a friend of mine that asked me and caught me off guard. And I've learned over the years not to talk about what you're working on, even though you're excited about it, because often it doesn't come to fruition and then you feel foolish.
Right. But
this one kind of slipped past the censor, the self-censor. So the reality is,
what we heard was you're working on a TV show called Year Zero, HBO and BBC, where the people doing it, and it's a go.
It's all correct.
Okay. Excellent.
It's in a very early stage of pre-production. So there's a million things that could happen between now and then. But it's a project that my creative partner, Rob Sheridan, and I have been working on since we did the record. We kind of envisioned this thing that was an album. It was an ARG-ish kind of component that came out. Those things already happened. And it was also a narrative and a story. And that story was going to live in the form of either a film or a series or perhaps a graphic novel.
I heard you say one time that it was a soundtrack for a movie that hadn't been made, sort of.
I said that for the Ghost record.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
keep up, Kevin.
I'm
for God's sake.
It's hard to keep up.
Things are moving quick here.
They are, I know.
But, the Year Zero thing is finally entering a phase where it may come to life. You know, and I shouldn't really have talked about it yet, but it just slipped out because we're excited about it.
Yeah, sure. Social Network is the movie comes out tomorrow, and as you explained moments ago, most of us, when we heard it was a movie about Facebook, weren't interested. But then we found out it was so much more in the pedigree of the director and the writer and even the stars, who are terrific young actors. It really has turned it into an exceptional project. And the music is a huge part of that. I mean, I've talked to people who have seen it, and they say, you know, there's music in many, many, many scenes of the movie, and it contributes so much to the overall feel. And Kevin, you've got some clips from the Social Network, and then we'll talk about how people can buy it.
I have one called On We March, and this is a little taste of that. Now,
when you're writing something like that, are you watching a scene? Are you looking at something? And
the way we did this trying film to capture it? Is I was very familiar with the script. I'd seen some of what David had shot. And then Atticus and I just went in a room and kind of just made swatches to put up on the wall that were ideas that kind of felt in the category of what moods came out of our reaction to that script and film. And
so you weren't watching a rough cut of the movie or anything?
Not at first.
Okay.
When we first generated these things, I wanted to turn them into David and see what resonated with him or what he responded to. And he responded to quite a bit, and we placed him in various scenes from that point on. Then the work came in to kind of fine-tune them and edit around and, you know, finesse them into the...
This one's called Intriguing Possibilities. Tell it's you, which is good, but it's also it is good. I mean, I think it's good.
Is it all you and Atticus playing the instruments, or did at some point you bring in additional musicians as well?
No, it's just us. I mean, we made a decision, Dave and I, initially not to use an orchestra or an orchestra. I guess you'd say in English.
Yes,
and we wanted some elements of an electronic bass and some sense of humanity and frailty, and we kind of chose. Most of the songs are rooted around or based on an acoustic piano in a kind of bed of cold and icy and decaying and fraying electronics, generally
speaking. That's fun. That's fun right there.
it's a good place to be, you know?
I noticed when I was listening to the soundtrack last night, Trent, as I was thinking about this morning, I heard a melody I recognized in The Hall of the Mountain King. It's a classical piece, right?
Yeah.
From Edvard Grieg. And by the way, you may not appreciate this. I've been to Mr. Grieg's burial site. I've been to the mountain that he is buried on in Norway, which is I recommend. It's a tremendous vacation destination. But
that's a terrible story.
I'm just saying, who gets buried in a mountain?
Right,
looking out
I'm
over
saying,
the ocean. It's pretty cool.
That is not a good story, is what I'm saying. I wouldn't have told that.
He wrote this classical piece, and it's just – it was a little bit jarring to me because, hey, why am I recognizing something from this brand-new Trent Reznor soundtrack? What's the story with how that ended up in the movie?
You steal it?
That guy's dead. He'll never know.
There's one scene in the film that takes – it's a race. It's a Henley Regatta, and it had not been shot yet. And – David said, what if we try an arrangement of this piece done as though Wendy Carlos was involved in it? And that sent me off on a several-week challenge of trying to actually execute that, and with many wrong turns involved. That was probably the hardest thing we did on this soundtrack. But what we finally wound up with wasn't necessarily the Wendy Carlos version, but it had a kind of evil tinge to it. And it works perfectly in the scene that he shot.
Did you know that Bean went to the place where this guy was buried?
How about that?
You know,
huh?
I just heard about that.
Would you have told that story if you had it in your back pocket?
I don't get a chance to bring up my Edvard Grieg story very often. He doesn't really come up on this show very much. And by the way, for folks who don't recognize the reference that Trent is making to Wendy Carlos, she is a legend. At the time, she was a he, but she was a legendary electronic music performer who really kind of brought the Moog and everything like that kind of into the popular culture with her popular records and soundtracks. And yeah, she's an awesome artist. I think we have one more clip, right?
Yeah, it's called A Familiar Taste. Is it refreshing to not have to come up with lyrics? Although you've done instrumental stuff a lot, but is it kind of refreshing to not have to?
Yeah, it's different. I mean, once you're in the world of instrumentalness, abandoning structures of pop music and trying to, you know, there's a real art form to trying to make a well-structured song, you know, quote-unquote song.
Are these still in the structure of a song, or do they need to be?
Well, what we did is when we finished working on the film and it was finally locked to picture and done, you know, Atticus and I sat back and said, you know, I think we have a pretty strong collection of things here. Rather than just exporting what we put in each scene, let's flesh these out into we approached this as an album from the start, which we didn't. But we spent another month or two really kind of fleshing it out into a listenable record. And I think the soundtrack stands on its own, as we're aspiring to do, is make something that had its own, you know, validity.
You have given away 5 tracks available for download everywhere, and now the album is also for sale. Tell us how you came up with this this unique strategy. You mentioned before that the record company, they kind of let you put it out on your own. But how did you decide to do it the way you're doing it?
Well, when I put the marketing hat on and try to think about how to survive in today's weird climate in the music business, you know, and watching what bands do and watching how people, more importantly, watching how people and fans consume music and what they like and how they listen to it and how they get it and how they hear about it, just thought it would be interesting to kind of use a similar business model to what we've done with the last few Nine Inch Nails things, which was to offer a nice sampler out, you know, kind of like the shareware model of video games years ago. And if you're into it, here's the whole thing, very easy to acquire at a very reasonable price. With this one in particular, we had the chance to work with Amazon in the U.S. just to get it out for $2.99 for a couple of days, and now it's up to its full price of $5, which I still think is very reasonable for lossless quality, high quality. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, were there conversations about, hey, you should charge more? Or no? I mean
internally, you know, yeah. And it gets into a very sticky subject of what is the value of music,
right?
And, you know, and it can lead you down a path of feeling pretty bad about yourself as a musician.
If it's worth nothing because everybody gets it for free?
Yes, and when you compare it to, you know, it's cheaper than a cup of coffee. I just spent a year working on something that, you know.
Is cheaper than a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough. But at the end of the day, it's free. You know, and to anybody that knows how to use Google,
yeah, true.
All music is free. You know, and so what we're trying to do is create a rapport with fans that is mutual respect. Maybe we'll give you the stuff at high quality. We're not asking for a lot, but some amount of.
I don't know, that $2.99 jump to $5. That seems outrageous.
I got to pay for that new pool, you know.
Exactly. Do you buy a lot of music online, Trent?
Yes.
That's
dot, dot, dot.
That was a question mark more than an answer, more than a period.
I really think that if labels would get their act together and move to a subscription model, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that music fans would pay 10, 15, 20 bucks a month and listen to everything they'd like. You know, that makes sense to me. That raises a bunch of other questions about how they would split that pot up.
Right.
You know, how much does Lady Gaga get, and then how much does everyone else get?
90 and 10.
Optimistically.
Well, you gotta save some for the Bieber. Come on, Kevin. No, but I see what you're saying.
Things are broken right now.
Yeah, you know, they're broken.
Things
right.
don't work, and it's not sustainable, and we're just trying to find a way that's reasonable.
The record companies haven't been nimble and quick on their feet. We'll say that.
Yes, you've noticed.
And you do have the benefit of having started with your career and making records before the system was broken, and now you're at a position where at least you've got a name and you've got a fan base and you've got a great relationship with those fans. If you were coming up today and entering the entering the system now as a new artist, it'd be a tough way to go, right?
No, and you raise a good point, and that is I'm very aware that, you know, Nine Inch Nails is a product of coming from the old school, you know, when it was still in place, and we certainly benefited from lots of aspects of that. We've also certainly given the lion's share of everything we've made back into those systems, you know. But if I were coming up today, you know, I think back to when I was trying to get signed or I was sitting in my bedroom with some ideas, and I really got in touch with what my goals were. What were my goals? At that time, you wanted to get on a label of some sort. How do you get on a label?
Because that was the only way then.
That
right?
was the only way that I knew
to get
you might
out.
Get a chance to get your music out to the most people.
Right.
So at that time, it made sense to really work on good songs, put them on a tape, get them into the hands of a label you'd like to be on. That seemed to make sense, more so than just playing out in bars and hoping somebody was going to show up and sign you.
Right.
Today, those things are irrelevant. Those goals don't seem relevant to me if I was a new act. But you have a lot of more tools now than you had back then. You have the ability to reach everyone in the world with a viral video, or you can self-broadcast yourself out to the world.
Right.
I still think it comes down to having good music, some unique something to say, and presenting yourself logically, get it out to where you wanted to get to. You know, I'm not 18 now, and I'm not starting in this world, but
right.
I would advise anyone in that situation to really think about, you know, what is it you're trying to do, and then just work really hard and make the best thing you can and put it out there. And good luck.
That's good advice. Our listeners of the Kevin and Bean Show are not used to either thoughtful or interesting on this program. So I want to thank you, Trent, for bringing that in here today. It's always fascinating to hear your take on things and to kind of go on this little journey of musical exploration with you. I love the Social Network soundtrack. You can get it now, as you've heard. You can go to Amazon.com if you want. I guess your website for this is it NULL.com? Is that right, Trent?
NULLCO. Null.
CO. Okay.
For Null Corporation.
Or just get the details at NIN.com, of course. Trent, will we see you again soon, or are you going back underground? Is this the last time we'll talk to you this decade? Or
crawling back into my cave. You know, see you next year sometime.
All right, man. Thank you so much for coming in. We enjoyed spending time with you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Ralph Garman is on vacation this week. We're taking turns filling in for the Showbiz Beat, and this time it's producer Alex's turn, and you sound much, much better than yesterday.
Chow! It's day two of Allergy Watch. I've got a fun combo of Benadryl and Sudafed going on.
All right.
I think it sounds kind of hot. I got to be honest.
Can you share?
This is the closest to ecstasy I've been on in a long time. I just want to pet Mike and hug Kevin.
All right.
It's pretty much, you know, what Lindsay Lohan has for breakfast.
Yeah, sure.
Speaking of Lindsay Lohan, did you see what I did?
That was smooth.
Michael Lohan, her crazy come to Jesus father.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I think might actually have a good idea.
Oh, stop it.
Wait.
Stop it.
He is making a move for conservatorship, which is what happened with Britney Spears after she went nutballs and shaved her head and started beating up paparazzi with umbrellas.
I'm not against the conservative. I'm saying he shouldn't have it.
Well, look, you can't.
Let's have somebody that's not crazy take
it.
No, what they should do is have Britney Spears' father, Jamie, be the conservator for Lindsay Lohan. I mean, clearly that guy knows what's going on.
Seriously. So Michael Lohan has asked a judge to establish a conservatorship for Lindsay Lohan. He met with attorney David Chone yesterday, and is going to hire him to help this process along. Michael is saying he doesn't want Lindsay's mother, Dina Lohan, or her business manager, Lou Taylor, to handle Lindsay's affairs because, quote, they're in it for themselves. And as you know, Michael Lohan's a giver. He's not about the cameras. He's not about publicity.
He's the last guy.
You guys don't know. You have no faith.
Wow.
All right. I don't know if you ever want these words to go together, but Tila, tequila, and sex tapes.
No. And no.
Yeah. Apparently there's a sex tape.
No.
There's a sex tape bidding war going on, if you can believe it.
Nope. Not happening.
She has not one, but two sex tapes with two different partners of two different sexes.
Mm-hmm.
How nice of her.
Yeah.
And now two porn companies are bidding for both tapes. Vivid Entertainment, which is pretty much the gold standard.
Oh, God, no, 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 no.
Wants, apparently, the girl-on-girl and then guy-on-girl tape. Tila, of course, is feigning being very upset.
Sure.
And that her privacy has been invaded.
I'm so She's angry. So why I could...
She's the biggest liar ever.
You such big liar.
But let's all remember, by the way, ordinarily, the Kevin and Bean Show, our official policy is we are yes on sex tapes. But let's remember that Tila Tequila had an angry mob at that Insane Clown Posse show. She took her top off, and the mob still threw poop at her.
They threw more.
Yeah.
We don't want to see what you've got, Tila. Well, put it away.
Here's her quote, which I love. She says, "If anyone out there is trying to leak a private and personal sex tape of me that was not meant for the public,
please.
I will swiftly deal with my lawyers." Oh, so you have a private and personal sex tape that would be meant for the public then? There's one that you forgot or that you're holding on to? Please.
You want to have sex?
No. No, 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 no.
That's the tape.
Yeah.
Look, this is the first step toward marketing a sex tape is you have to come out immediately and say, "I'm against it and please don't watch it and I'm embarrassed." That's how you get people interested in the tape.
How dare you invade my private life?
All right.
How much could I get for it?
And in sad news, comedian Greg Giraldo has passed away. He apparently went into a coma for the past 5 days after reportedly accidentally overdosing on prescription pills, which is very scary to me, and you should talk to Dr. Drew about.
Yeah,
I don't know how you can accidentally overdose.
You can do that, he says, easily.
Easily, yeah.
He was, you may know him, he was a judge for a long time on Last Comic Standing. He is, along with Jeffrey Ross, known for their celebrity roast appearances and briefly appeared on The Marriage Ref, Jerry Seinfeld's latest show. Just hours after he passed away, though, Gilbert Gottfried thought that enough time had passed.
Oh, no.
Those of you may not know.
No.
I've never found him funny. When I was a kid growing up, he just was that guy with, like, the loud, screechy voice.
Right.
He tweeted, quote, "If Greg Giraldo is cremated, will that be the Greg Giraldo roast?"
Oh. Maybe too soon.
Yeah. Apparently, TMZ and TheRap.com contacted Gilbert, and he said, quote, Greg can't say anything about it now. I'm not worried about him calling and complaining.
I think we just crossed the line.
I don't know if that's an effed up joke that he thought Greg would find funny, because they were friends. I don't know, but it might be too soon. Maybe wait like 24 hours.
Maybe just a day.
Yeah, a day. Happy birthday to Monica Bellucci. Oh.
Yes.
Ding. Lacey Chabert, Kieran Culkin, T-Pain, and Marion Cotillard and her crazy eyes.
She doesn't have crazy eyes.
She does. She's beautiful.
She's a beautiful woman.
She's on my list if I switch teams, but seriously.
Her eyes are awesome. Now put her in a sex tape with Gila Tequila. Now I'm in.
Bonkers.
I'm Alex. It is your Showbiz Beat.
You are listening to the Kevin DeBean Show on a Thursday. Thursday means we visit our close personal friend, Dr. Drew Pinsky from the nationally syndicated Loveline Show when he bothers to show up. And he joins us now on the Kevin DeBean Show right now. Hey, Doc, how are you?
First of all, how dare you?
Second of all, Psycho Mike has been crying like a little girl today because you weren't there last night and he missed you.
You know what? He started texting me at about 8 o'clock Pacific time, calling me all sorts of names, and I thought, "Wow, he really those are terms of endearment for this young man."
Yeah,
he really does miss me.
Yeah, he does.
I think honestly, and I know we joke all the time about how the whole world has a crush on Dr. Drew. I think Mike really, really has it bad for you. I mean, I think he gets all tingly on his way into Loveline every night.
I'm willing to admit that.
But we got a thing.
I believe it's reciprocated. Exactly.
It is reciprocated. He put me on a diet recently, and I don't follow anybody's direction, and I followed Psycho Mike's direction.
Because you're a fatty. Because you're a giant fatty, Dr. Drew.
Yeah, that's what we know about Dr. Drew. Yeah.
Well, Mike and I share the same body image issues, so we sort of
that's disturbing. All right. He's ruining you.
He's going to ruin you, Dr. Drew.
Well, all right, listen.
Weeks ago, he's on a mission to do that, and he's succeeding. What are you going to say?
Wow.
We don't have very much time with our weekly visit with Dr. Drew, I'm sorry to say. And there are a couple things we need to ask you about. And this is so great that we've started this this plan of having you on every Thursday, because there's something in the news every week that we really do want your professional opinion on. You have, for years, been talking about the epidemic of abuse of prescription drugs in this country. What do you know about this Greg Giraldo thing, and what went wrong there, Doc?
What went wrong is, an addict was given either a benzo or an opiate by a professional who doesn't understand the implications of doing so. And the addict themselves, once they're exposed to those medicines, they instantly change and their disease activates and they begin manipulating and distorting and changing in the way the addictive disease always affects the brain, and they escalate. And they lie to their doctors, and the doctors don't understand that the addicts lie, and they get too much of their medicines going, and they explode. And this is how many more celebrities have to die before? And by the way, this is not a unique phenomenon to celebrities. This is just merely what's reflected in what's going on out there in our country at large. If you're an addict, do not put pills in your mouth. Period.
I didn't know he was an addict.
I didn't either.
Without talking to sponsors, without talking. Well, I'm not at liberty to out anybody. I don't know for sure. And that's not my point. My point is that only addicts do this.
Okay. All right. Now, here's my question. Here's my follow up, because it seems like I got afraid that normal people that aren't addicts could OD on drugs that they're given from a doctor accidentally.
You can, but it's difficult to do that. Okay. You really got to be missed, because they are synergistic and not just additive in their effects, and things affect one another. And if you forget to tell your doctor what you're taking, and we don't have a great integrated system whereby the pharmacies notify the doctors of what other doctors are prescribing. But for the most part, in my experience, I've lost hundreds of patients to this phenomenon. None of them didn't have addiction.
Wow. Okay.
That's shocking, by the way, that there is no kind of integrated database like that. So, in other words, that's why we hear about doctor shopping. Is I go to you, Dr. Drew, you write me a prescription for something. Then I go two doors down to another doctor, and he does the same thing, and there's no clearinghouse that will compare those two prescriptions?
And being funny, you should bring that up, because I understand that you were interested in me prescribing Adderall for
yes.
you this very morning.
Bean does want Adderall.
I just heard about a new film about some guys taking Adderall, because apparently it really helps you get stuff done, and I just feel like I'm wasting most of my days, Dr. Joe, and I really kind of need a kick in the ass, and prescription drugs sounds like the way to go for me.
Well, the unfortunate reality is, whenever I talk to young people, I try to be exquisitely accurate, and the reality is when kids take Adderall, they do a little better on tests, they do get stuff done, but the price is massive, and being the problem for you is it's not going to do much for your Asperger's.
All right. Let's keep that out of it. But I mean, it's kind of like methamphetamine, I guess, in one way, but it's nowhere near as destructive or harmful as that, right?
It is an amphetamine derivative. And if you're an addict, it is as problematic. If you're not an addict, and again, that needs to be carefully ruled out. Even there has to be no genetic potential of addiction. It could be a very good medication. I was thinking of medicine called Intunib. You got to look that one up online too. That might be good for you. Here's the deal: you're not an addict.
So right, not you, at all.
Yeah, I get that. So for you, it might be a rational thing if somebody carefully evaluated you, not so you could get stuff done, but so some of the symptoms of focus and some of the, let's call them, scattering in your thinking, perhaps.
He's being kind with the scattering, yeah. By the way.
You know, I've read a little bit about Adderall, and when people are not taking it correctly and they go off it, don't they go into this terrible depression?
You can. Again, listen, it's not without its risk. It can also induce manias, and you wouldn't want to see being in that state.
Nope.
That would not be a pretty thing.
Nope.
But I'm saying, you know, I am... One thing I want to caution people against is vilifying medication. Look, OxyContin, if you have pancreatic cancer, it prevents suffering. It is the greatest thing on God's earth. If you're a drug addict, it will kill you. And so it's not about the substance. It's about the relationship of the substance with that particular genetic makeup of the individual and then how we as clinicians choose to use those things in such a way as to hopefully only help people and not hurt them.
Is it also true, and I think one of my sorority sisters told me this, that you lose weight on Adderall as well, Dr. Drew?
Ask Mike.
Mike, is that true?
Of course. It's amphetamine.
Fantastic. There you go. All about this.
Can Bean get a prescription?
Yeah, that Mike has bugged me a few times for this one, too. Just
I bet he has.
Hey, Dr. Drew, I know we're out of time. I wanted to ask one last question, and that is, why are you retweeting a hoax about an earthquake?
Oh, yeah. That was awesome. Here's the lesson learned.
Please.
Think first, tweet later. I thought Lonnie Love tweeted it to me, and I thought, wow, I'd be irresponsible if I'm not to pass this along. Pushed the button and went, wait a minute, nobody can predict earthquakes. What the hell did I just do?
Yeah. Well, at least you panicked almost 2 million Americans by retweeting that guy with the earthquake prediction. Nice job, Dr. Drew.
I'm just glad to see that you guys lived through the big quake of 2010.
Sure.
And everything's okay today.
By the way, can't you undo a tweet? Can't you go back in and take it back?
No, it's out.
I think you can.
Yeah, you can. You can delete it, but by then people have already seen it. So, especially Dr. Drew. We're all hanging on every word of Dr. Drew.
Nice going, Dr. Drew.
All right. Dr. Drew is on every show all the time, always. I want to give particular love because we got some hurts from some War and the Ape fans today when they heard you were going to be on. That airs Monday nights at 10:30 on MTV. And it's always a pleasure to catch up with you every Thursday here on the Kevin Amin Show. Doc, have a great week, man. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
And now it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
You got to wonder if there were no cameras, if he would have had to go to the top of the Eiffel, of the wherever the tower to get you know.
That was a moment with Kevin.
That's a good point. I'm glad I made it. It's the world famous K-Rock at 9:39.
Time for the final look at the showbiz beat here on the Kevin Amin Show. Let me tell you what I like about us. What I like about us is that we have free movie tickets for you now. My Soul to Take is the latest from the master of the suspense thriller, Wes Craven. It looks very, very spooky. It opens up on next Friday, October the 8th. You get to see it ahead of that. We have five pairs of tickets for you right now at 1-800-520-1067. This is the serial killer who swore he would return to murder the seven children that were born on the night that he died.
Yeah, like it's their fault.
Yeah.
By the way.
Right, they didn't have anything to do with it.
That's bogus.
So he comes back from the dead, and then he goes looking for them, and he kills them. So he did not learn a lesson by dying the first time around.
Correct.
But it looks very, very scary. If you want to see My Soul to Take, call right now, and you win from the Kevin Amin Show.
David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
One of our favorites to make fun of. You know, he looks like he's a fun guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fun to be around.
He sure does.
Always
yeah.
in a good mood. That
positive,
sort of.
Energetic, absolutely.
Well, according to and I'm putting this in air quotes, insider on the show Dancing with the Stars, they told Us Weekly that his staff drove them crazy with phone calls.
Really?
They would call. They would want to change rehearsal times. They would have shooting times. They would want to cancel or change those. And they even went so far as to suggest different camera angles.
Wow.
Yeah, listen, David would like to be shot from the front right, not the front left. Could
oh
you make
my
that
God.
Happen, please? Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
If you sign up to be on Dancing with the Stars, they're an enormously successful franchise. They know what they're doing. They know how to make the show look good. They know how to make you look good. That's what they're there to do. You let the professionals do their job, right?
This person, this insider, went on to say that he talks nonstop and rarely makes sense.
Yep.
That sounds like our David.
That's him.
That's our dude.
Yeah, hi, this is David Hasselhoff, and I don't drink or take drugs.
Right. Well, you should, because it can't get any worse, and then at least you'd have a defense. This Nick Cannon, we got to put a stop to this kid. I'm telling you.
How do we do that?
He is the host of America's Got Talent. He's terrible on that show. He really has no skills to host a program. He's not entertaining. He's not funny. He's not nothing. He's a zero. But he's somewhat popular because he's married to Mariah Carey. He is now selling, according to New York's Page Six, he is now selling sponsorships, essentially, for his birthday party when he turns 30 next month. $25,000 gets you 3 tweets from his birthday party, while packages are also being offered if you want to be included in the gift bags. You can give me free stuff to put in my gift bag for my partygoers for a mere $2,500. So you pay me, and then you give me free stuff that I will then give away to my guests. That's what he's got going on. None at all.
But at least the 3 tweets will be worth it.
I mean, are they going to put this thing on TV? Is that why it's worth it for the sponsors?
Does he have a reality show or something? I don't know.
Not that I know of. And what's his background, Mike? Was he in a band or something, Nick Cannon? Was he famous for something before this?
He was like a Nickelodeon kid, I think. But he went on to make movies. He was in like Roll Bounce and some other, you know, Underclassmen was another terrible
movie. Roll Bounce was good.
Terrible movie he was in. But then he did the MTV show Wildin' Out, I think was it where he really got like, you know, mainstream notice.
Can I tell you that none of those projects captured my attention? At no point did I fall under the spell of Nick Cannon. So I am still completely lost as to what the hell this guy's all about.
But you would pay $25,000 for 3 tweets.
I don't believe I would. Thank you.
All right. Remember that super hot chick reporter that was the hottest sportscaster in Mexico?
Oh, yeah.
New York Jets. She was in the locker room. Some of the guys made some inappropriate comments. She said she was a little worried.
She certainly knew how to wear a pair of jeans.
She knew how to wear a pair of jeans. She's a looker. Apparently, Hugh Hefner has stepped in.
Okay.
He's done the right thing. He's made a, quote, substantial offer, a pretty big offer, to have her pose nude in the pictures of Playboy.
Well, I'm surprised that hasn't happened before, honestly.
As am I, and I'd like to see it happen now.
I feel kind of bad for Hef because it seems like the only way he can move Playboy magazines at the newsstand is if he can get a celebrity to pose naked.
Which is BS, by the way, because that's a pretty good magazine.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing wrong with it. Right. Exactly. Well, I hope that happens. I'd like to see some of that. Let me see. How about this one that I just lost that was so entertaining?
Oh, here we go. That was good.
No, this is a good one. Right. Buffer Enterprises is the company that's in the news this week. They are the guys who trademark "Let's Get Ready to Rumble" for Michael Buffer. You know, he says that before boxing matches.
Right.
Now they are trademarking for Michael's stepbrother, Bruce Buffer, or half-brother. I'm not sure which he is. They're trademarking his trademark phrase, which is "It is time," that he uses for the UFC.
It's a good delivery, though. I mean, it really is. He goes crazy. It is time! He yells. And you get excited when you hear it.
It is so funny that Let's Get Ready to Rumble definitely became part of the language. I mean, it definitely, you see it in movies, you see it in commercials, and other people try to use it.
Wasn't that more unique at the time he started using it?
I think so. I mean, he was the guy who kind of made it up, or at least popularized it. It is time, I guess they're arguing, is the same thing as nobody used it the way Bruce Buffer has used it. But apparently the plan is that they are going to own it. I mean, you are going to have to pay. If you say it is time, you're going to have to write a check to Bruce Buffer because it'll be his. They'll sue you if you use it. Exactly. That's my question.
What if we say, like, it is time for another song?
You're out. Nope.
We have to pay.
Can't do it.
I mean, honey, when's dinner? It's time. All of a sudden, now you're writing a check to Bruce Buffer.
Well, I don't think you have to do it in your personal life, no.
I don't know how far this goes, but be careful if you happen to be on radio or television and not ever say it's time.
That's ridiculous.
It's crazy that you can find words like that and own them. I love that.
I found who I'm voting for the next president of the United States.
Oh, really?
It is on TMZ. It is the Naked Cowboy. Now, I don't know if you've seen this guy. He has been in New York City in Times Square 20 years.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, I totally know who that is.
He plays a guitar, and he has a cowboy hat, and he's in his underwear.
Tidy Whitey's, if I recall.
Yes. And that's his gig. That's his whole thing. And then he puts his little guitar case down, and you give him tips. He has announced that he's running for U.S. president. And I think that he's qualified.
And why is he qualified?
Because he spent 20 years in his underwear in Times Square. Okay. So he must have learned.
That takes some grit.
He must have learned stuff about people. I don't know. I just love crazy people.
I like
and
it.
I want him to be our president.
He has spent time with real Americans, I guess. You could argue that.
Wouldn't it be awesome if he became our president and then still wore the cowboy hat and just the tidy whities? That would be so cool.
I somehow don't think that's likely. I don't know if this is a movie or not. Look, I was as impressed as everybody in the country when Captain Sully, Chelsea Sullenberger, brought that U.S. Airways plane down on the Hudson River last year. I mean, that was an amazing thing. He definitely saved hundreds of lives, and it was remarkable grace under pressure. I just don't know if it's a movie. I mean, he was in the air for 3 minutes. How is that a movie? What do you lead up to with? Just watching people get on a plane?
Yeah, that is weird. I mean, I don't know how. I guess you would have to tell the backstory of him and all of the people on the plane.
And the people on the plane. That's usually how they do right?
I mean, has he had an unbelievably successful and exciting career? Did he kill a bunch of guys in Nam or something I don't know about? Is there more to Sully than just that day? I'm having trouble, you know, like I said, I respect for him, but I'm just having trouble picturing it being a great movie. Especially since you already know, you know, everything that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I was thinking like the big airplane movie, what was the one they made about the 9/11 flight that went down?
Oh, yeah.
United 93.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, that was a movie that, and there was a lot there for the movie because we weren't on the plane and we have just bits and pieces of what happened and they told a story about what they think might have happened and they were able to kind of put it together and make it a great, and that was a really good movie, I thought. That was very, very well done. Something like this, though, everybody's alive to tell the story, and we kind of know what happened in the 3 minutes there in the air. So I don't know how they're going to make it a movie, but, you know, good luck with that.
Maybe it's going to be just a really short movie.
You know?
maybe so.
Just make a trailer. That's it. Some celebrities love to complain about the press. Gemma Arterton is better than most people.
Oh, she's better than most people for lots of reasons.
Oh, God.
She is something.
Do you know who she is, Lisa?
Yeah, she's from the James Bond movie, right?
She's from...
Isn't that
James Bond movie.
Was she a Bond girl?
She was from the most recent Bond movie. She's the redhead in that movie, the one opposite his love interest, the Russian broad. What's her name?
I only know her from her.
She was also King of Persia.
I didn't see that.
Prince of Persia, right. Yeah. Whatever. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
I know who she is. Yeah.
She's phenomenal.
She played the woman who, if you look at, she's so beautiful, you will. I think she did. I don't remember. Anyway.
Good delivery.
Gemma Arterton. Look her up. It's worth it.
Okay.
She told Cindy Adams of the New York Post that she plays a journalist in a new movie. And she has a newfound respect for the media. That's what you should say.
Of course you should. Suck up.
That's what you do.
She's a smart girl.
You know what she didn't say? It's hard to be hot. She didn't say that. So it makes me love her more. If that's possible.
Yeah.
And finally, before celebrity birthdays, here's a PS to our earlier conversation about the Buffer Brothers. And listener Eddie makes a phenomenal suggestion, Kevin. You need to trademark. What did you do? Like right now, because it is already taken off. It's already on ringtones, and people are talking about it, putting it on T-shirts. I mean, what did you do? It could be your thing.
You
every time that? Somebody asks, "What did you do?"
We would have to.
What did you do?
We would have to figure out how to spell it first of all.
What did you do?
I know it has a J in it. That's the only thing I know about it.
What did you do?
So that's an outstanding idea.
All right, good idea.
Today's celebrity birthdays, lots of good ones, including Lacey Chabert. She was, of course, on Party of Five, and she's also very hot. She is 28 years old today. How about Jenna Elfman, who she had a new TV show last season. It came and went. It did not survive, if I recall correctly,
it
right?
It went very quickly. I never had a chance to see it.
I love her and everything about her.
She, of course, is Dharma from Dharma and Greg. If you don't recognize the name, she's 39 years old today. How about actor Eric Stoltz from Pulp Fiction and about a million other movies and TV shows? He is 49. Karen Culkin is 28 today. Barry Williams from The Brady Bunch turns 56 today. Trey Anastasio, the head of the Fish Nation Network, is 46 years old today. Monica Bellucci turns 46 today. And the beautiful and talented Fran Drescher, who I never have a bad thing to say about.
Oh, let's hear that. Let's hear the tape of you on the red carpet.
Oh, look at the time. I don't know that
we were on the red carpet, and Bean said...
The makeover of the night on the red carpet. Fran Drescher joining us up here. You know, we were talking as you were coming up that you've done a movie with Pierce Brosnan before, The Beautician and the Beast. Did you ever imagine he'd end up being a James Bond?
I didn't. Pierce Brosnan was not in Beautician and the Beast.
Really?
I think I'm going to get back on the line.
Smart idea.
That was awesome.
May not have been. Well, first of all, there were two things wrong with that. One is I was talking about the wrong actor.
Right.
Okay, one. And two is Makeover the Night is my way of saying, wow, you're usually so ugly,
yes,
but you cleaned up and look okay today.
It was a backhanded compliment.
That was harsh.
Makeover the Night.
Everyone knows what that means. Yes.
Like, out of all the people we've seen, you cleaned up.
honestly, there's no way it could have been more insulting to Miss Fran Drescher. I'm sorry about that.
And by the way, we're not exaggerating. She literally just walked right back down.
Yeah, she did. That was the end of that. Yeah. That's true.
All right. Thank you. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. Tomorrow morning, we have an all-new program. We have Adam Carolla this week in Rage.
Yeah.
We're going to play our new game, Kanye or Diddy.
Oh,
we
like
have lame wedding proposals. If you have a lame wedding proposal, we're going to have
there's way more of those than great ones.
There really are. Beans, for example.
And I'd like to say, and we'll talk about this tomorrow, there's also too much pressure on the guy to make it a spectacular wedding proposal. And that really bugs me because it ought to be enough at the end of the day that you just got asked to be married, okay? I don't think so much effort needs to go into how that's asked.
Isn't it
the important thing I'm going to spend my life with you?
That's why Bean said, you want to go out to dinner or go to Vegas and get married?
Yeah, that was exactly it.
Because he's a hopeless romantic. Also tomorrow we have Movie Beat. We have Petros Papadakis talking college football. And in studio we have comedian Kevin Nealon, who we love so much.
Yeah.
So that's all tomorrow morning on an all-new Kevin and Bean Show.
Don't go away. The beautiful Cat Corbett is up next with 40 minutes nonstop K-Rock music like Bob Marley. Also Jimmy Eat World, Puddle of Mud, The Temper Trap, Living End, Cake, and more straight ahead.